Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, 2nd of April, 2026. We got a lot of stuff to cover, of course, as always. It never ends. Really, never ends. And yeah, there was a big speech last night, big developments today. We're going to get into all of it. I'm definitely going to open up the phone lines for your calls today. Not sure if you were watching American Journal this morning with Rex Jones, but he had some very interesting callers, and it made me jealous. And I want callers. I want to talk to you people. So we're going to open up the phone lines probably in the third hour. We got a lot to get into. Let's start today like we do every day with our Daily Dispatch. Here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 2nd of April, 2026. Tired Trump's speech proves he has no route out of the Iran war. Of course, the big speech yesterday, total disappointment, I think, from just about everybody. There was very little information, very little new data points at all. When the White House announced on Tuesday night that President Trump was to give an important update on the Iran war the next evening, the world's media was sent into a frenzy, and nothing really came of it. And people were very confused by this, saying, well, who does that? Who has a primetime speech where they demand all the networks end their normal programming to go to your speech, and then you just don't really say it? But he did this in December. Do you guys remember he did the same thing in December? It was the same thing. It was like big speech, big primetime speech, canceling the normal shows. And then it's just him like, I'm amazing, the economy is amazing, and everything's amazing. And it's like, thanks, Trump. Thanks for that. It's not, and everything's not amazing, but thank you for your encouragement. Sort of what yesterday was. It was like, we won the war, but we're not opening the strait, and it's done, but we are going to be expanding operations over the next 2 weeks. I think, well, we'll get into it later. I think the whole thing was to just sort of settle the chaos, like make an appearance, settle everybody's nerves, you know, try to put across the idea that there's a steady hand on the tiller, probably right before a major operation. I still think Friday or Saturday morning is going to be the ground invasion of whatever form it takes, but that's what everything seems to be pointing towards in my perspective. Meanwhile, U.S. oil prices soar 11% as Trump's Iran war speech stokes fears of escalation. President Trump said the U.S. will hit Iran extremely hard over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Trump added that the war won't last long and that discussions with Tehran are ongoing, which again, he's been saying that the whole time. So they keep denying it and the war keeps going. So there we are. Meanwhile, a barbaric assault. Iran condemns U.S.-Israeli bombing of century-old medical research center. The Iranian Ministry of Health said Thursday that a U.S.-Israeli airstrike hit and severely damaged the Pasteur Institute of Iran, a century-old medical research center that has played a key role in combating and preventing infectious diseases in the country. This was a sort of long-term cooperation piece of scientific endeavor by the French and the Iranians that had been around for long before Iran was even a country. It was founded in 1920. And we just blew it all to smithereens. And I just have to wonder if this isn't sort of setting a precedent that we might not want to be setting. Like, so far, we'll have to get into this later, too. Let me get through the Daily Dispatch. But would you be surprised if a hospital in America was blown up with a terrorist attack? If you are, if you would be, then maybe we should be speaking out right now about our government doing it over there. Because fair is fair. U.S. and Israel literally blow up Vance's peace talk after strike on Iranian negotiator's home. So the negotiator that was working with Vance to try to get a peace deal or ceasefire of some sort was bombed by Israel, and his wife was killed and he was severely injured, directly, exactly like Joe Kent keeps saying that they do. We'll show you that clip on the other side. Finally, Trump fires Pam Bondi as attorney general. And, you know, if you thought maybe this was a little glimmer of light, a single breath of fresh air, we make our way through the fetid swamp. No, it's getting worse. No, he's replacing her with Todd Blanche. So we've been begging for Pam Bondi to be removed. But Todd Blanche is going in her place, so that's worse.
Been an oil field for as long as I've been an info warrior, 18 years, and Texan, born and raised, so I know like knife. like you do. And I finally broke down and ordered one. I got the neon orange, and I'm blown away. I've had Benchmark knives that are easily $400. Had them for a year, lost them. This thing has the same feel, same quality, same, I mean, everything about it. I haven't had a knife stay this sharp in a long time, and I'm, like, horrible with equipment. I'm, like, very abusive with knives at work every day. I'm extremely impressed. I'm very impressed. So anybody out there listening, who knows if a knife comes back in stock, get one. You know, any of them. I want to get the ring knife when it comes back out. Other than that, I'll join all the supplements and,
Yeah, particularly the pocket knives, the folding knives, the flip knives are super high quality at incredibly low prices. I mean, these same knives sell in stores all day for like $80, we sell them for like $40. We'll be right back.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, coming to you live on the 2nd of April, 2026. Producer Scott just came in. He has a great nickname for President Trump. I think it's an accurate one. President Monkey Paw. He's President Monkey Paw. You get what you asked for, but not how you wanted it, right? And it actually, the more I think about it, the more accurate it is. We've been begging Pam Bondi to be fired, or Trump to fire Pam Bondi, since she was put in the office. Well, your wish is our command. We got our wish. Who's she being replaced with? Todd frickin' Blanche. The worst person in the Trump administration, as far as I can tell, as of now. The single reason why we failed to get any justice against any of the deep state criminals that are still walking freely. Okay, so you get what you want. It's just not how you expected it. We've been begging. I mean, one of the whole reasons we voted for Trump in the first place was to get out of the Middle East. Well, guess what, folks? Oh, we're getting out of the Middle East, all right? We're fleeing the Middle East with our tail between our legs. Iranian missiles in hot pursuit. It's what we asked for, I guess. So maybe we need to be a little bit more specific when we wish for President Monkey Paw to do something. Like, yes, we do want a crackdown on the colleges teaching, you know, perverse woke stuff. We do not want them banishing anti-Israel sentiment, sir. Thank you. Like, do we need to be that specific? This should all be obvious. So President Monkey Paw is at it again. Trump fires Pam Bondi as attorney general. She will be replaced for now by Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche. So he's acting attorney general for now, until they can find someone worse. Okay. Until they can find someone even worse than Todd Blanche, I assume he'll be replaced, by Hillary Clinton next or something. We don't know. Be Hillary Clinton in a mask or something. It'll be a guy that looks suspiciously like Jeff Epstein with a big burly mustache. If I had to guess. Let's go to clip number 42 here. This is Fox News with the announcement earlier today. Pam Bondi, she's out. Let's watch.
Kaylee, I just got off the phone with President Trump. We have a big scoop. Pam Bondi will soon leave her job as the attorney general. She is going to get a different job within the administration. It doesn't sound like there is any bad blood between her and President Trump, but it does seem like they want her to go and do something else. And in an interim role, she will be replaced by Todd Blanche, who is currently her deputy at the Justice Department. So it doesn't sound like Blanche is being elevated long term to the attorney general. There might be somebody else that the president wants to go in there. President Trump soon will announce to the entire world that it is the end of Pam Bondi's time as the attorney general. He still thinks that she is a great person and that she did a good job. And he still wants her in the fold because she will still be an important part of the administration, he tells me. But no longer as the top law enforcement officer of the United States. That, at least for a little while, is going to be.
Going to be in the hands of Todd Blanche. Todd freaking Blanche. Okay, so there you go. That's what's happening. Now, this is actually kind of a bit of a change in trajectory, because so far the pattern has been that it's all the best people in Trump's administration that are being ousted thoroughly. Basically only a few left, and they seem to be, you know, barely hanging on by their fingernails. But I really have nothing. Like, I cannot possibly justify why this would be happening and why Pam Bondi is still being held over. Again, the people that literally betray Trump, he treats better than his friends. Alex played a clip today of Trump where he's talking about, Hegseth oust Army Chief of Staff General Randy George. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has asked Army Chief of Staff General Randy George to step down and take immediate retirement. One of the sources said Hegseth wants somebody in the role who will implement President Trump and Hegseth's vision for the Army. George previously served as a senior military assistant. Can we see what the reason was, I wonder? I'm going to scroll down a little bit. Because I guess he was nominated for the position by Joe Biden, confirmed by the Senate in 2023. He would have typically held the position until 2027. The current vice chief of staff of the Army, General Christopher Lenev, who was formerly Hegseth's military aide, will likely be considered as a replacement. He previously served as a commanding general of the Army's 82nd Airborne Division from 2022 to 2023. Interesting. He may have lacked faith. He may have not been fully committed to the apocalyptic death cult that's currently getting us into war in Iran. Yeah, I got nothing. I got really no explanation as for why this would be happening right now, or what would even, you know, motivate Trump to do this. But it does seem like everybody who hates him is his best friend. Alex played a video on the show today of Trump talking about being seduced by Mark Levin. Just another weird, kind of just weird thing Trump has been saying these days. And he's like, maybe I shouldn't be seduced, but I can't help it. When people say nice things about me, I like them. I can't help it. Like, that's not really true though, is it? I mean, Mark Levin kind of despised you for a while, worked very hard against you, just like Ben Shapiro. I mean, everybody he's surrounded with, but everybody he's surrounded by right now are never Trumpers that only went over to Trump when they realized that his victory was inevitable and they wanted in on the power that he was generating. So he destroys everybody that actually supports him, or at the very least, you know, pretends they don't exist. So this is just pathetic and inverted and bizarre. But I don't even think we need to, like, I don't know. It's kind of a waste of time to speculate. It's just, this is just what's happening. You know, Pam Bondi's illustrious career, in which she both gave the initial sweetheart deal to Jeffrey Epstein as a prosecutor in Florida, and then made her way up to the DOJ, where she tried to trick everybody into thinking that the Epstein files were being released. That was a silly event. Like, maybe we should go through some of her greatest hits, Pam Bondi's greatest hits of her time, her 1 year as the top cop in America, in which crime has flourished, white collar crime especially so. I mean, I've got a story in here somewhere about, you know, the shouting match that occurred before she got fired. I'm having trouble finding it because I'm just having to go through story after story about the relentless fraud that is destroying America at every level from every angle. I mean, it just goes on and on. But apparently, Trump's not done firing people quite yet. Trump jokes about firing Caroline Leavitt as bad publicity spirals, which, again, Alex called Trump Mad King George, and I was mentioning this before. I mean, we like to think it's not going to happen to us. We like to think that we're able to avoid these fates. But I was saying previously, there was the revelation that, you know, Trump was being separated from people, and that only good news, he only wanted to hear good news, and that he's delivered a 2-minute video just showing the highlights of all the successes in Iran that day. I said it was the beginning of this week. Like, this is what happens with tyrants, unfortunately. And it is a feedback loop, and it's a cycle that they enter into where their ideas fail, but they don't want to be told that. And so anybody that does tell them the reality about what's going on, they get mad at and usually kick out, and everybody else gets the signal and learns, okay, they only want good news. And so then what starts happening is this feedback loop begins, and the more and more it goes, the wider and wider the disconnect between the leader and reality becomes. Because if you fire everybody that's telling you the truth and the people around you are only telling you lies, then you're going to be making bad decisions because you're making decisions on the basis of lies. And when those bad decisions go badly, they don't tell you what goes badly. They tell you what went well. So you double down on that bad decision. And that's the cycle that continues. And anybody that tries to stop it is treated like an enemy because they're telling the truth and he only wants to hear lies. So anybody like Joe Kent or Tucker Carlson or Charlie Kirk or anybody that had the ability at one point to go up to Trump and say, hey, you're being misled here or this is a bad decision, they've all been driven out. They've all been driven away. Now nobody's telling him his decisions are bad. They're in fact telling him the decisions are good. So he keeps making the bad decisions, which is going to cause more people to want to go to him and say, hey, you're not doing the right thing, which is going to make him more paranoid and thinking that more people are turning against him and trying to stop him and lying to him. We are in a feedback loop that we should be very, 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 very familiar with by this point. And this type of joking about Caroline Leavitt, I feel like, is both the joke itself is kind of a symbol of this type of narcissistic madness, right? You see that as well as people who really do become like total tyrants, like authoritarian tyrants. They actually will think it's funny to be like, I could have you killed, you know, I could snap my finger. They'd chop your head off. You know that? Have you ever seen like Caligula or like read anything about Roman emperors? They would literally sort of like revel in the fact that people were terrified of them. Be like, I could kill you, you know. Oh, it takes one word, so you better be careful. I'm not going to, though. And it's like, please don't kill me. Yeah, it's sort of where we're at. He's like, yeah, maybe I'll fire you because of the bad policy. But then because of the bad publicity, does he think it's her fault? Does she think it's her fault that the publicity is bad? Or do you think it's the decisions that you're making that are leading to the bad outcomes, that are leading to people not liking the decisions? That's the bad publicity, but he's blaming Caroline Leavitt. Again, even if it's a joke, it's like probably not that much of a joke. It hints to his real mindset, which seems to be, if I'm being criticized, it's somebody else's fault, which is a very dangerous position for somebody to be in. Sometimes it happens even if the people themselves don't want it to be the case. In other words, it doesn't have to be a conscious action by Trump. It's usually not a conscious action by the person in charge. Do you want to hear maybe the most like famous example of this? It ain't history. I mean, but probably the most famous example would be something like Hitler, right? It would be something like Hitler making terrible decisions about opening the Second Front and not listening to his generals because, you know, he'd become megalomaniacal by then. This is a constant pattern that we have to defend against. And people don't want to think that we're in this pattern right now, but I think we could be. And I think it could be a created situation by the people around Trump because it's useful for them. And then at the end of the day, he'll get the blame and they'll make off scot-free. But no, one of the best examples of this is episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars. You guys know George Lucas was like this, where the first 3 Star Wars were brilliant because he wasn't who he became. George Lucas was just some up and coming, you know, sci-fi nerd director with a dream, and people didn't really take him that seriously and would, you know, not listen to him that much. But then by the time episode 1 is being made, he is upheld. He's uplifted as this, you know, demigod. He is the creator of Star Wars. No one can question him. And if you watch the making of episode 1, you can see it in action where his bad ideas, everybody around him, it refuses to say it, refuses to, you know, contradict him. And he doesn't create that atmosphere. It's just something that naturally occurs. You know, people are just afraid to say something. And you don't get the feeling that he was a tyrant that was, you know, viciously attacking people that were disagreeing with him. So again, I might sound silly bringing up Star Wars Episode One, but this is not a good movie. It's not a well-made movie. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I like it a hell of a lot more than the sequels, but it could have been a whole hell of a lot better if George Lucas had people around him who could have put a damper on some of his more, ridiculous desires. So again, I'm just saying this is just a natural part of like human existence, and we're seeing it right now in the Trump administration. There's no reason why the Trump administration would be immune to this. And they're playing at a lot higher stakes than, the future of a sci-fi movie series. But still, this is the type of thing that happens, and that's how you come out with bad decisions. Now, in the case of Episode One, it still made a lot of money, and it still, got made and got created. Like, it can still happen. It's just, could you imagine if it would have been handled by somebody with anybody except for yes men around him? So whether it's invading Russia or making Jar Jar Binks a main character, it's like this is what happens when the people around the powerful are quislings and cowards, and when the people who are in power don't go out of their way to deliberately find alternative viewpoints and actually judge the results of their decisions in the basis of reality. So Trump jokes about firing Caroline Leavitt as bad publicity spirals, which, again, it's just his fault. Speaking in the Oval Office, and again, just not to belabor, and we'll move on, but it's sort of the perfect thing, right? He does something bad, then the publicity is bad, and in his mind, he's literally like, what did Caroline Leavitt do? It doesn't even enter into his mind that it could be his fault. It's just emblematic of everything else going on. Maybe Caroline's doing a poor job. I don't know, Trump said jokingly, turning to face Leavitt directly. You're doing a terrible job. A White House official confirmed the remarks were made in jest. Trump quickly followed up. Shall we keep her? I think we'll keep her.
Yeah, hopefully so. Hopefully so.
The good news is getting fired from Trump massively lowers your risk of being jailed by the Democrats when this little experiment of war in Iran blows up in the face of the Republicans. The Democrats get back in power and become tyrannical jackasses that just flagrantly violate the rule of law to go after their political opponents. The earlier you're kicked out of the Trump White House, the more likely it is that you don't end up on a scaffold, waiting to be hung by the psychopaths in the Democratic Party that we are currently handing our country to because Trump has decided to go all in 100% on sacrificing our empire for the fledgling Israeli empire. Trump polled advisors about replacing Tulsi Gabbard as intelligence chief as well. President Trump has privately asked cabinet members in recent weeks whether he should replace his director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, venting frustration that she shielded a former deputy who undercut his rationale for war with Iran, according to two people briefed on the discussions. So, again, this is what in a healthy functioning system, somebody like Joe Kent, a man with, honor and respectability who was dedicated to his duty and his job and was forced to take extreme measures in these extraordinary circumstances, that should have been a wake-up call. And in a normal, healthy, functioning system, that would be recognized as a wake-up call. And he'd be working with Tulsi Gabbard to try to figure out how to prevent that from happening in the future. Or would listen to Joe Kent and see if what he said was actually valid. But we're not operating in a healthy system right now. We're operating in a solipsistic narcissist cube. We're trapped in a cube of Trump's narcissism. And so he's going to blame Tulsi Gabbard for not going hard enough against Joe Kent, even though Joe Kent's resignation was a direct consequence of Donald Trump's unwillingness to listen to people like Tulsi Gabbard. So he could listen to Tulsi Gabbard, actually have the correct information going back in time. If he had listened to Tulsi Gabbard, we wouldn't have gotten into the war with Iran. We wouldn't be in the quagmire that we're in already. Now, you remember in the beginning, it was supposed to be 48 hours, supposed to be 24 hours, supposed to be just in and out, Venezuela-style attack. It didn't work out that way. So about 4 days in, they said, don't worry. Fear not. We've already planned on this. This operation was always meant to last 4 weeks. That was about 4.5 weeks ago. So again, it seems like this speech that Trump gave yesterday was an attempt to kind of act like we're on the right path, make people think that we're doing the right thing. Some of the statements he made about you have to cherish the Strait of Hormuz, I mean, it is all just bizarre. It's all bizarre. And it was all self-contradictory about how we've won, but we'll be increasing the, you know, attacks that we make over the next 2 or 3 weeks. We've totally defeated them. Now we're out. That you guys take over the Strait of Hormuz while at the same time removing tens of thousands of soldiers into position for what appears to be a major ground invasion. So this is kind of a giant bummer. We can go to the speech. I mean, he gave a couple speeches yesterday, and they were all just utter and complete and ridiculous madness. But let's go to Donald Trump here in one of the crazy speeches he gave yesterday. Not the one where he is being called Jesus. Not the one where he's saying that we can't have daycare because the war is too fun. Let's go to clip 25. This is Trump on the Iran war during his big primetime special event, mission accomplished speech yesterday. Let's watch.
Thanks to the progress we've made, I can say tonight that we are on track to complete all of America's military objectives shortly, very shortly. We are going to hit them extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong. In the meantime, discussions are ongoing. Regime change was not our goal. We never said regime change, but regime change has occurred because of all of their original leaders' death. They're all dead. The new group is less radical and much more reasonable. Yet if during this period of time no deal is made, we have our eyes on key targets. If there is no deal, we are going to hit each and every one of their electric generating plants very hard and probably simultaneously. We have not hit their oil, even though that's the easiest target of all, because it would not give them even a small chance of survival or rebuilding. But we could hit it, and it would be gone, and there's not a thing they could do about it.
Okay, great. So, again, we'll get into all of this. I also have, you know, Israel fatigue. I'm sick of talking about it. Yesterday, I only spent 30 minutes on the war, but still it feels like all of these, everything going on, the Iran war just sort of looms over, casts a shadow over, and is impossible to get away from. So we'll try to, you know, figure out exactly what the hell's going on here when he says we've won, but we're going to double down and we're not going to free the Strait. Europe has to do it. I mean, it's just, again, just all crazy. And the craziest part of all, perhaps, is that literally every time we get an off-ramp, Israel destroys it. Literally. Every time we're negotiating with somebody, every time we have somebody that we think we might be able to work with to come to a peaceable conclusion, to have a ceasefire and start working to rebuild the Middle East in a new way, Israel bombs them to death and kills them. Because they're our enemies, because they have gotten us into the trap, and now every time we try to pull ourselves out of the pit, they're up there with a big stick shoving our face and pushing us back into the hole. So I think I know where we need to focus our ire.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it, and you like it, and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into, and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigley, our sponsor, has a really high-quality, private-label, top-selling brand that we were able to private-label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high-quality zeolite. Please do your own research. And then go to theoliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Inner zeolite detox defense. Advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick.
Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bovine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners in the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time. So all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs, cancel any time, $30 a month, get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything, thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm going to try to get through as much as I can about Iran here because I want to move on. We got fraud to talk about. We got the drama in the White House, apparently a screaming match before Pam Bondi was fired. We'll talk about what the heck's going on there. I just want to talk a little bit about what we do into the future, where we go into the future, because you know, CPAC this year, as we've been covering, was basically a total dud. No, not very high energy, not a lot of attention there. The speakers weren't even, you know, all that exciting. And yet, if you look at pictures from CPAC, what you see are basically Trump worship images everywhere. Just, you know, big bus with Trump's face on it, statues of Trump, like cutouts of Trump, Trump everywhere, Trump, Trump, Trump. And it's like, okay, but he's not ever going to be the candidate ever again. So what's next? I mean, he's not going to be president next time. He's not going to be running next time. He's not really even that big of a benefit right now for midterms. Really, the best strategy for midterms for Republicans would be to sort of separate themselves from Trump and go, hey, I don't know what you think about Trump, but I will do this and this and this. I will stop these things that Trump isn't focusing on. That would kind of be the best move for them. But it's just clearly it has been such a useful tool, being able to capture the MAGA movement by capturing Trump. And by the way, this is literally a CIA strategy that was developed by George H.W. Bush. We've explained it with the Eagle II document, and this is how they took over Japan. It used to be that if the CIA wanted to take over a country, it would try to sort of infiltrate an entire party. And then they came up with this, it's basically a Manchurian candidate. It's kind of where the Manchurian candidate idea came from, but it was just like, hey, you just get the guy on top. You only need to really get one guy. Get the leader, and everybody else just falls into line. It kind of seems obvious, but you know, if you've never done, you know, this type of espionage, overthrowing entire countries before, you might think it's actually better to have like a big ground force with like a bunch of spies on the lower levels who can manipulate. No, you just need to go to the top guy, either blackmail or co-opt him somehow, and then you're golden. That's what they did with Trump, right? They have captured Trump now. They have stripped him and redressed him in their own image. And yet they retain that loyalty that people have to Trump because of the sacrifices he's made, the BS he's been through as a consequence of his actually trying, at least in the beginning, to make America great again. There's a reason, there's a good reason people have loyalty to Trump, but it's not the sign of a forward-thinking party to be worshiping Trump when, as of right now, the future is not going to include Trump. It can't include Trump. He's done in 3 years, no matter what, if it doesn't happen sooner. So what's the next step? Where's the next path to go down? And I understand that third parties are a no-go, a non-starter here in America. I get that. I understand that. Here's why I would argue it's a little bit different this time, because I was thinking about this. Because every other time in American history that there's been an attempt to create a third party, it has been because one of the two main parties has a breakaway. In other words, you know, you can have people in the Republican Party that aren't satisfied with the neocons, so they try to do a libertarian ticket. And basically what ends up happening is the effect of a third party, like a third breakaway Republican Party, is that you damage the Republicans, right? Because any people that would be voting for Republicans might vote for you, and you're just going to hurt sort of your side at the end of the day. I think it's a little bit different this time because I think the outrage at the establishment is really universal and bipartisan, and that you're just as likely to get somebody from the left who says we need a third party as somebody on the right who says we need a third party. And I don't know if there's been a time in history where you could sort of equally harm both parties by creating a third one. I think that might be possible. And then again, the leftists will turn on you. The leftists are evil. They still think all of this dumb crap that, you know, is just completely nonsensical, which is why, you know, it's important to make these arguments in a way, I think, that explains people. It's funny because I feel like almost everything I talk about on this show is like, I don't even necessarily disagree with the aims of the people that I'm arguing against, but they seem incapable of recognizing that the so-called solutions being offered end up diametrically opposing their ultimate goals. I think you'll understand what I mean. In other words, I am an environmentalist. I do care about the ecology of the earth. I care about endangered species and preserving wildlife. Like, I deeply, deeply care about that. But I care about that more than I care about a hell of a lot of other stuff. Like, I would significantly, like, so much, I care so much more about the, like, survival of some rhino in Africa than about the overthrow of the mullahs, right? Like, I don't know, God gave us rhinos, sort of unique, like, incredible creatures that can never be created again unless we do some sort of clone homunculi, which I'm not in favor of. So, like, should we not be preserving this? I mean, the fishing fleets in China. The point is, it's not that I disagree with the left on environmentalism. It's that the left allowed themselves, like complete idiots, to be completely taken over and have every single environmental concern that you could possibly express all subsumed into the climate change agenda, which is obviously just an anti-human trick. And it's just like, okay, how can we not bridge this gap? We both want the environment to survive. We both have concerns about the pollution that humans are bringing. I just happen to place that blame where it belongs, on India and China and the poison that they're pouring into the food and water, or on, you know, the corporations that are manipulating all this, not cow's farts, right? You got to stop being idiots. And the reason I say this now and I'm bringing this up now is because it's exactly the same thing with Iran. I don't even disagree with the people that say the mullahs are bad and it's dangerous to have these bad people with the nuclear weapons. I don't want a nuke going off in New York. Guess what the result of this military action will be? Do you think it'll be less likely that they get a nuke or more? This is really what I struggle with, because it seems universal and ubiquitous, and it doesn't matter what side you're on. Same thing, you know, the debate we had with the boomers, right? We're saying this, that, you know, the other guys were like so anti-Islam and like hated Islam. And I was just trying to explain, like, but don't you understand that the whole reason Islam has any power in the West is because of the wars in the Middle East? The whole reason that Islam is a powerful force, the reason that hundreds of thousands, if not a million, British girls have been raped by migrants is the direct result of killing Muammar Gaddafi. And they will even, like, acknowledge that fact and still think it was a good thing to kill Muammar Gaddafi. It's just like, well, then what are we doing? Then what is this? Our goals are not even misaligned. It's just you people are so easily tricked by bad actors that pretend to be champions of your cause and then just make everything worse for you and then double down and you never seem to notice. It's crazy. It's genuinely crazy. And I'll just go on and on about the climate change thing, where it's just like, yo, you want to save the earth and somehow you've been tricked into thinking the only way to save the earth is to tax first world countries so Bill Gates can chop down millions of trees and spray sulfur dioxide into the atmosphere to block out the sun. Are you idiots? Here's an idea. Nature preserve. So have we tried that yet? Have we tried doing that yet? What the hell? How about instead of forcibly destroying the, you know, farming communities that have relied on livestock for all of time, how about instead of just going in and forcing them to abide by totally arbitrary made-up metrics, which are all just a excuse to shut down what has been a functioning and thriving family farm so it can be replaced with some sort of sick warehouse, inhuman factory farm situation. Like, why are we falling for this? Why do you people keep falling for this? So it's just incredibly frustrating. It's a constant thing everywhere all the time. And we'll see that here as we talk about the war in Iran. I do have a lot of videos to get to when it comes to this, because I agree with the Atlantic. By God, I agree with the Atlantic. I don't know what else to tell you. They're right when they say maybe Trump should not have given this speech. And maybe this wasn't the best idea. Americans have been waiting for their president and commander-in-chief to address the nation and explain why the country is at war. For weeks, Donald Trump has offered only snippets and soundbites about his decision to lead the United States in another conflict in the Middle East. His primetime address this evening was, one presumes, aimed at informing and reassuring the American public. Maybe he'd have been better off not trying. Trump's critics, including me, have castigated him for refusing to go on television and provide a comprehensive explanation for the war to the American people. But given his performance this evening, perhaps he had the right instinct. His address did not come across as a wartime speech, but instead as a disjointed series of complaints, brags, and exaggerations, along with a few outright lies, delivered by a man who looked and sounded tired. After his 19 minutes on the air, brisk by Trump standards, Americans could be forgiven for being even more concerned now than they were only a few days ago. Yeah, President Monkey Paw at it again. And of course, his speech just didn't, it genuinely didn't make any sense. Like, on the face of it, especially he's bragging, he's saying that it's all done, but also we're going to increase The attacks over the next few weeks, totally incoherent, obviously. But at the same time that he's saying that, you know, declaring total victory, I mean, this really was analogous to President Bush on the aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished banner. Which, look, actually, let me correct myself, because this is worse. Because to be totally fair to George W. Bush, that mission accomplished banner was not about the war in Iraq. I don't know if people know this. But that famous picture of George Bush on the aircraft carrier with the mission accomplished banner, that was like some mission that the aircraft carrier was carrying out, and they did achieve that mission, and so they hung up the banner. It wasn't supposed to ever be like, we won the war in Iraq. It was always misconstrued that way. I don't lie to you about anything. I don't like George W. Bush, but to be fair, that was never the case. So actually, Trump's mission accomplished speech last night, he really was declaring that the Iran war was over. Unlike George W. Bush, who had a, you know, unfortunate, you know, photo op that wasn't really intended. Trump intended to say mission accomplished. This was on purpose. This was by design. And it was just as ridiculous. Because as he's claiming that they've destroyed all of the ability for Iran to do anything ever, let's go to clip 43 here. This was a Fox News report about what happened last night in Tel Aviv, Israel. Let's watch.
We've been watching the Supreme Court. Israel is being pounded by Iran. Sirens sounding over Tel Aviv as a barrage of missiles hit the nation. Let's bring in Jonathan Hunt with more. Jonathan.
Kaylee, Israel in general and Tel Aviv in particular have been under almost constant bombardment throughout the day today. One of the most intense bombardments, in fact, since the very early days of this war. Just about an hour ago, we had an hour-long series of sirens. We watched as the interceptors were launched from this area at those missiles, which came in one after another from Iran. And this, remember, this...
All right, so mission not quite accomplished. Okay, maybe not totally accomplished, considering the fact that it was the biggest bombardment of the war so far. Okay, well, I guess, you know, if one of the things Trump said from the beginning was the war aim was to take out these missile lines, I guess that would be a failure. But that's just number one on the list. Trump initially laid out five goals for the Iran war. Here's where they stand from New York Times. One, we're going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. The U.S. and Israeli militaries have destroyed many of Iran's ballistic missiles and launchers and airstrikes, but a large number are undamaged, and Iran continues to fire missiles in the region. In fact, the biggest fusillade yet was yesterday. Okay, so I'm going to say a big no on number one. Number two, we're going to annihilate their navy. The two militaries have destroyed much of Iran's navy. A notable attack took place near Sri Lanka in early March when the U.S. submarine fired torpedoes to sink an Iranian destroyer, the Iris Dana, which had a crew of 180 people. Initial reports said at least 80 people were killed. The ship had taken part in naval exercises in India and was on its way home. The United States had participated in the same exercises. All right, so yeah, we'll give them that one. They did destroy Iran's navy. Not that the navy was super useful, not that it would be a core component of their military actions. Their entire defense strategy is focused on missiles as the first layer, small drones, robot boats, or self-guided submarines, placing mines to stop the transit of the Strait of Hormuz. And then you have the infantry, which they have an overwhelming number of soldiers and a track record of success in defending their homeland, let's just say. But they destroyed the Navy. But they definitely did destroy the Navy. Well done. We're going to ensure the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world and attack our forces and no longer use their IEDs or roadside bombs, as they're sometimes called, to so gravely wound thousands and thousands of people, including many Americans. Mr. Trump here was referring to militias in the region that receive financial support and other types of backing from Iran. The militias are still active. Some in Iraq have fired rockets at U.S. diplomatic buildings there during the war, for instance. The most powerful militia, Hezbollah, based in Lebanon, has been attacked by Israel in recent years, but has not been destroyed. Israel has invaded Lebanon and signaled this year that it could occupy part of the south. And in fact, I believe the latest count, if I'm not mistaken, is 134 Merkava tanks that have been destroyed in the week that Israel has tried to invade Lebanon. So yeah, it's not going well in that regard either. And on top of that, you have Syrian militias who just yesterday declared war on Israel and are going to be bringing the fight there. And of course, Syria itself is collapsing into factional violence as the Druze and Christians are targeted with pogroms. So far, if you're keeping count, that's one goal out of three that we've succeeded in. That one goal being the easiest and most pointless one, the destruction of the Iranian Navy. Number four, and we will ensure that Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon. It's a very simple message. They will never have a nuclear weapon. U.S. intelligence agencies did not assess before the war that Iran had made a decision to develop a nuclear weapon, but the Trump administration has pointed to Iran's highly enriched uranium, which the government created and stockpiled after Mr. Trump withdrew from the Obama-era nuclear deal. Okay. So we had to go to war to solve the problem that we created, what you're saying to me right now. And no, we have not stopped them from having their enriched uranium. And in fact, we'll get to another story in just a second that proves that if anything, the ultimate outcome of this military activity will be that Iran will be more dedicated to having a nuclear weapon than ever before, likely with, an increased likelihood that they'll be able to receive help from this, from the Russians or the Chinese or somebody else with nuclear power. So not only do we not achieve number four, we actually did the opposite. And five, finally, to the great proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will probably be your only chance for generations. Very similar to the Strait of Hormuz. Seize it. Capture it. Treasure it. Treasure the gift we're giving you. Sort of a different vibe they're sending out right now. If you want to know the truth, let's go to clip number 12 here. This is Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday. Let's see what he has to say to the people of Iran.
What I learned tonight, Iran's going to have a choice in 2 to 3 weeks. You either do a deal where you get out of the business you were in, or we're going to blow your stuff up that will allow you to function as a nation. That is your choice.
Well, let me ask this, because, I don't even think they have 2 or 3 weeks, Senator. That's 2 or 3 weeks when their infrastructure would be blown up. That's their electric grid. That is their ability to have any income. The lifeblood of their entire economy is oil. So that would no longer exist. Let me ask.
Okay, so that's just straight up war crime, terrorist stuff, right? There's no actual justifiable strategic reason why you would blow up their electricity infrastructure or water desalinization. And right now we are, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy, actually, kind of an interesting like paradigm that's operating right now, because we're bombing hospitals. We've bombed 600 schools in Iran, 600 schools. Okay. We've bombed the university in Tehran. We just bombed this, medical institution that's existed for 100 years and was founded by the French. We now have Lindsey Graham, of course, echoing Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump, saying we're going to target their infrastructure, the basic, functions of government that they need just to survive as a people. And you got to wonder, what sort of precedent are we setting? I mean, when you act this brazenly and in such callous disregard of war crimes, just the basic, proper conduct of a nation. One of the main reasons you don't do it is because you realize that we have a lot of soft targets as well. We can't go bombing their hospital because they'll bomb ours and we can't do anything to stop it. So let's not open that can of worms. Let's not set that precedent. Let's not give them the excuse, right? We don't seem to be concerned at that. Now, the reason Iran is not returning the favor in kind is because Iran recognizes, and you can tell this from the speech or the letter that the president of Iran sent out yesterday to the American people and to the people of the world, saying, we understand we're not at war with the American people. We're at war with your government. And basically, we're on your side, which, again, I mean, it's hard to even argue against that when you see the targets they're targeting and what they're doing. So they understand that, like, their best hope at this point, because obviously America's more powerful than Iran. There's no question about that militarily overall. Now, whether we can invade Iran, that's not a matter of who's more powerful. That's a matter of defensive, encroachment or natural features. Regardless, we're obviously more powerful than Iran. Iran is using the unpopularity of this war in, you know, to their advantage by doing things like writing that letter. And don't think I'm stupid. I get that all of this is psyops, but it's sophisticated. And what's happening right now is that Iran probably does have sleeper cells. Even if they didn't send people over here, they certainly have plenty of people in America that are ideologically aligned with them and probably could be easily radicalized or organized in some way. It probably wouldn't be all that difficult for them to do something to utterly destroy a medical center here in America. Smuggle a bomb in, start a fire, get 10 dudes with automatic weapons. I mean, it wouldn't be that hard. Hospitals are soft targets. They're not military installations. Anybody can walk in one, right? That's why you don't, attack hospitals. But obviously, Iran understands the gain for doing a tit-for-tat, revenge hit against a hospital in Iran. Yeah, Golden Dome, $1.5 trillion fiscal, 2027 defense. But, like, even that, it's not what I'm talking about, right? I'm talking about terrorism. I'm talking about somebody who's walking into a hospital with a bomb strapped to their chest. There's nothing the Golden Dome can do about that. There's nothing anybody can do about that, really, at the end of the day, without locking down the entire country to be a prison ward where every public place has metal detectors like Israel. And so it just sounds miserable living in an open air jail. But I wonder at what point it'll get to if the Iranian regime decides, you know what? Maybe we do just need to make the Americans feel pain like we felt pain. Because right now, I genuinely think they're not targeting us, the American homeland, because they understand that this war is unpopular. If it ever gets to the point that they're like, it doesn't matter, we're gonna be destroyed if we don't do something drastic, they might do that. And by bombing these hospitals, bombing the schools, bombing the universities, total callous disregard to the targeting of innocents, they are setting us up to take the blowback. They're setting America up to be the victims of blowback attacks that are totally unnecessary. We do not gain a strategic advantage by blowing up a hospital, but we do set a precedent to which they would be justified in attacking our hospitals. I don't want that. Why would you?
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, sort of put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record, good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification and the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexshowstore.com. It's T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theallenshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Talking about the Iran war, I got some interesting views to share. But I want to talk about what happened yesterday, because the headline is Israel literally bombs the negotiator that was working with J.D. Vance. So J.D. Vance is supposed to be negotiating with this guy, ex-Foreign Minister Karzai. And just like multiple other times in the very recent past, Israel has killed the person that we are expecting to use as an off-ramp to get a ceasefire in peace out of this. I want to go to, clip number 47 here. This is the actual guy. This is Karzai, the ex-foreign minister, obviously before he was targeted by Israel. He's been wounded. He wasn't killed. His wife was killed. They targeted his home. He was the guy J.D. Vance was talking to. I don't know if he's able to talk anymore. Here he was answering questions early on in the conflict.
Supreme Leader, what does that mean for your military effort and the confrontation with the United States and Israel?
That means the system is quite functioning.
So the United States says it's drastically degraded the Iranian military, the capabilities as far as missiles is concerned, drones is concerned. How much longer can you do this?
That is one of the false narratives that the United States government is producing. Iranian military is quite strong, as you see, because they have the motivation, they have the arms that they need, which are produced in Iran. As a matter of fact, we are not dependent on any other country for weapons and arms.
So your side is ready for a long war if the United States and Israel choose that. Do you consider this an existential threat to the Islamic Republic?
It is an existential threat to the Islamic Republic, and therefore we have to stay with full might, as we are doing now.
Is your side seeking, or will you seek, a ceasefire with the United States at this point in time and with Israel?
I don't see any room for diplomacy anymore, because Donald Trump had been deceiving others and not keeping with his promises. And we experienced it in two times of negotiations, that while we were engaged in negotiation, they struck us.
How does all of this end then? If you say right now there's no room for negotiation, President Trump says he wants complete surrender, what does that lead to?
There's no room unless the economic pressure would be built up to the extent that other countries would intervene to guarantee this termination of aggression of Americans and Israelis against Iran.
Finally, what is your message to President Trump as we sit here, as the war is going on?
That means that what is important for us is the end of this game. And we are ready to continue that game.
The end of this game, you mean how this war will end?
The end of the game would be the time that American and Israelis would come to this understanding that this strategy is not working. And they have to stop their aggressions against Iranians.
Or they can just keep killing everybody everywhere. Iran ex-Foreign Minister Karzai gravely wounded in attack on his home. Exactly like Joe Kent said. Let's go to clip number one here.
Trump even said it today when he was at the plane side. He was asked, who are you talking with inside of Iran? And he said, I don't want to name them because then they might get killed.
Mr. President, again, because I don't want them to be killed.
Well, they might get killed by the Israelis because the Israelis don't want us to have negotiations.
Essentially, you're saying we just need to tell them no.
And not just tell them no, you have to take things away from them. You're going to run any strikes by us. And also, you're not going on the offense anymore. You're done being on the offense. If you're attacked, we'll back you up. What takes place now in Iran, that affects us, that affects the GCC, that affects the Straits of Hormuz and world energy. You're done.
We don't have a problem doing that.
They created the conditions for the war. They forced us to start the war. And now they're systematically eliminating our ability to ever stop the war. because that's who we're really at war with. They're just using Iran like they're using us.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra methylene blue.
I know. Blue. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra methylene blue. I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Ultra methylene blue. I just can't shut up about it.
This stuff works.
Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
In Iran because he's afraid that they'll be killed. And everyone knows he's talking about they'll be killed by the Israelis because the Israelis have been killing the moderates and killing the negotiators. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know.
There you go, folks. Tells you everything you need to know about who wants this war, who doesn't, why we're still in it, where it goes from here. Again, Israel got us into the war, and now they're preventing us from getting out. That's what's happening. They're using Iran like they're using America. Okay? They don't want us to get peace. They don't want us to get a ceasefire. And this, again, just has to, I mean, you have to wonder what's happening in Trump's mind. What's happening? You know, how does he interpret all of this? Because time and time again, he is being humiliated by Israel. And this has become a quagmire because of Israel. This is like the 10th time Israel has done this. You know that? We had somebody that we thought was going to take over. That's what that whole 48-hour turnaround was about. It may have worked. It may actually have succeeded. We were in contact with somebody that was like, I got all the people in place. I can take over. You just need to take out the top guys. We take out the top guys. They slot into those leadership positions, call a ceasefire. Like, that actually might have worked if the Israelis didn't kill the guy. So then we do it again. And we find somebody else, they kill him. And we find somebody else, they kill him. They don't want Iran to be a functioning country. Again, this is tomorrow's news today. I just can't reemphasize that enough. We actually are tomorrow's news today, and this was the obvious interpretation the moment that the war started. And I told you the moment that the war started that this would be the outcome, that this is the only possible outcome, is that Israel, and because Israel through America, they want Iran to be a failed state. How many times have I said? They want a Syria 2.0. They want a completely destroyed sort of stateless region where various armed factions can war against each other forever, with the ultimate upshot being that they have no ability to project power outside of their own borders, meaning that America or Israel could bomb them at will whenever they want, and they would have no capacity to respond. That's how Gaza was. That's how Lebanon is. That's how Syria is. That's how Iraq was for a while. I mean, you have this week Israel bombing Damascus. They bombed Damascus. Maybe there'd be a response from the Syrian army, but of course not. Because A, they don't have the capability to respond. B, we put a puppet in place. That's the ultimate goal. You want to know what the goal for Iran is? Just look at Syria. Look at the pogroms against Christians. Look at the attacks on the Druze. Look at the way that the literal head-chopping terrorist is being feted, being celebrated and honored in Europe right now. Literally rolling out the red carpet for him. And of course, Israel mandates death penalty for West Bank Palestinians who kill in terrorist acts, i.e. defend themselves against the actual terrorist attacks. There's just, again, so much when it comes to the Iran war, but we got to get through some of it, but some of it's very interesting, I have to say. So Iran ex-foreign minister Karazi gravely wounded in an attack on his home. Kamal Karazi has been seriously wounded in an apparent assassination attempt that killed his wife. The United States, as United States and Israel strikes continue to pound Iran, they reported that his home was targeted the previous day in an airstrike. So again, it's like, Do we not just play the video of him being like, negotiations are a non-starter, these people can't be trusted? He should have listened to himself. He knew. He knew they couldn't be trusted. He made the argument. He said, they kill our negotiators. They did it before the Iran war even started. They did it last June when they bombed Qatar, bombed the negotiating teams there. Like, this guy's like, yeah, it's not worth it to try and negotiate with America, despite knowing that, despite his reservations, despite being aware that he couldn't trust the Americans in Israel, he still entered into negotiations, ostensibly because he actually genuinely wants peace for his country, and Israel kills him. And again, I'm sort of just horrified at the number of people that hear this type of stuff and are like, well, they shouldn't have messed with us then. And again, it's like, do you not understand that this is all literally against your interests? This is against your direct interests. They are creating a situation in which Iran is more extreme than before, more like insane than before, like less, you know, bound by, you know, international law or anything like that. I mean, you know, you're creating another ISIS. They're not going to care about anything. More likely that they're going to get a nuclear weapon, more likely that a nuclear power gets involved and helps him get a nuclear weapon, someone like Russia or China or Pakistan or anybody around them that has nukes, that might feel like they're getting the short end of the stick and want to swoop in. There's probably going to be massive amounts of migrants at the end of all of this that will flood into Europe and probably take it over completely. That's if they don't start World War III in the meantime, start the draft and totally wipe out whatever remnant remains of the native population of those countries. So I really don't know what else to tell you, but like, this doesn't benefit anybody. And it's not a good thing. I'm trying to think of like a metaphor or something where it's just what you're doing is diametrically opposed to your own interest. But like, you just can't see that. And I'll open up the phone calls, the phone lines for your calls in the third hour. But the call from a character today on American Journal arguing with Rex. And I was convinced he was a troll but then you remember like, no, there's some people that are just like that. And just literally are like, it doesn't matter to them. There's like, but America's kicking ass. It's like, but not really. But every ass we kick is just us going further down the path of destruction. What are you talking about? It doesn't matter, I guess. Same thing. Argument I was getting is like, you idiot, they're going to take Iran's oil. And then last night Trump gives a speech where he's like, we don't even want the oil and we're not taking it. Okay. So every single thing ever claimed about the Iran war in the positive has been fake. Everything. Oil spikes as Trump vows to hit Iran extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks, threatens to send it back to the Stone Age. And they keep saying this phrase, back to the Stone Age. Pete Hegseth said the same thing, back to the Stone Age, where they belong. Like, yeah, you're just horrible people. But interestingly, as a fan of history and words and etymology, thought we'd figure out where this phrase came from. History News Network has an etymology for the phrase, bombing them back to the Stone Age. Just after 9/11, the United States allegedly threatened to bomb Pakistan, quote, back to the Stone Age, unless it joined the war in terror. In his forthcoming book, Pakistani leader Pervez Musharraf attributes that ultimatum to Richard Armitage, who flatly denies it. Now, Richard Armitage, you may remember the name Richard Armitage. He was the fifth of the five members of the Council of Five, along with George H.W. Bush and William Lansdale and Lieutenant General Ferrara, William Colby, and a few others. This was the seed council that started the deep state. All right, so in Vietnam, when the CIA was trying to basically overthrow countries and doing a bunch of stuff they're not legally allowed to do, they were running into trouble because Congress controlled their purse strings and so therefore had oversight over whatever they were doing. So if they wanted to overthrow a country, they had to go to Congress and say, hey, we're trying to overthrow a country, we're trying to assassinate somebody. And that was inconvenient because Congress wasn't always okay with, you know, breaking international law for the benefit of the cabal. So they decided to make their own money separately. So they wanted to create a drug running operation. They recruited five people, each with a specific skill that they needed. It actually made kind of a good, like, Ocean's 11 heist movie. Only would star George H.W. Bush, who was called Poppy, by the way. Like, you know his nickname was Poppy, right? That's because he was in charge of running Poppy from China. He had all the connections in China. He was a pilot. They set up a fake air. Anyway, you should know all. The point is, you should recognize the name Richard Armitage as being George H.W. Bush, so-called, quote-unquote, gopher. He was the right-hand man to George H.W. Bush, was with him in the CIA, helped to establish the drug-running operation, and, of course, still held a, you know, position of power in the George W. Bush White House several decades later. So apparently he came up with this phrase to saying bomb Pakistan back to the Stone Age, but actually comes from an earlier time. The quote is actually usually attributed to Curtis LeMay, the scowling Air Force general who incinerated two-thirds of Japan's cities in World War II and was disappointed when Kennedy wouldn't let him do the same in Cuba. In his 1968 memoir, he suggested that rather than negotiating with the Hanoi, the United States should, quote, bomb them back to the Stone Age by taking out factories, harbors, bridges, quote, until we have destroyed every work of man in North Vietnam. So I just think it's kind of an interesting, historical parallel that, in fact, the phrase bomb them back to the Stone Age harkens back to the last outrageous quagmire that actually kind of permanently broke American society, the Vietnam War, the ridiculous boondoggle that represents probably the greatest foreign policy failure in American history was itself. The strategy was centered on bombing them back to the Stone Age. So it's interesting that they're referencing back to this other quagmire, this other failed exercise of American imperialism, the Vietnam War, to describe the Iran War. That's just fascinating, isn't it? Isn't that interesting? So again, the headline from AOL, U.S. and Israel literally blow up Vance's peace talks after strike on Iran negotiators' home. Donald Trump's peace talks with Iran may have blown up after the U.S.-Israeli strikes seriously injured a key figure in the Iranian regime on Wednesday. Iran's former foreign minister, I believe, Kamal Karazi, who'd been helping organize a meeting with J.D. Vance aimed at helping to end the war, was injured when a residential building in Tehran was struck. According to local reports, Iranian officials have called the joint U.S.-Israeli strikes an attempt to derail diplomacy. And it worked. And tell you what, I bet literally any other Iranian negotiator that wants to make a deal, they probably don't want to make a deal anymore. You literally keep killing everybody that wants to make a deal. Or Israel keeps killing everybody who makes a deal, and then Trump takes credit for it. You explain it to me. Meanwhile, U.S. and Israel are bombing bridges and medical institutes in Iran and calling it victory. The Pasteur Institute of Iran hit today in strikes is far more than just a building. It's a century-old pillar of global health and the oldest medical research center in West Asia. Founded in 1920 in collaboration with the Pasteur Institute of Paris, it spent over 100 years combating outbreaks such as rabies, smallpox, and cholera. As a leading hub for vaccine production, including BCG and hepatitis B, the institute represents the height of Iranian scientific advancement and humanitarian service. The World Health Organization also verified that it was among at least 13 health infrastructure sites hit during the U.S.-Israel war. Targeting a facility dedicated to preventing disease and developing life-saving medicine strikes at the core of Iran's public health infrastructure. In the same wave of attacks, the B-1 bridge in Alborz, officially named the Ibrahim Razi Bridge or Razi Bridge, was recognized as the tallest bridge in the Middle East and was also targeted. Standing 136 meters high and stretching over a kilometer across the Karaj River Valley, it was designed to alleviate one of Iran's most severe civilian challenges, the traffic bottleneck between Tehran and Karaj. By linking the Northern Karaj Freeway, the bridge was meant to ease daily commutes. And we bombed it. The nature of these attacks reflects the U.S. and Israel's real objective of systematically degrading Iran by targeting its logistical and medical backbone. The B-1 bridge, developed with the involvement of the Qatam al-Anbaya construction headquarters, stood as a symbol of advanced engineering aimed at modernizing transport. And we just bombed it to hell. So again, I ask you, like, what would be the argument against Iran bombing our bridges? I mean, we are direct war. I mean, it would be a little different if we at least had that minimal, you know, mask of Ukraine, right? Because we allow Ukraine to, like, bomb Russia, but we feel kind of safe doing that because it's like, well, that's Ukraine doing it. If they get hit, oh, well. But it's all our intelligence and it's all our everything. The point is that by behaving in this utterly brutal and unstrategic way. And this may be the point. I mean, the point may be to cause blowback to America. There's not really any other reason. It's not going to drive people away from the regime. It's, they aren't storing nuclear waste in the bridge, right? And this just has nothing to do with any of the proclaimed goals of the war, because every outcome of this type of attack is only negative for America. And if you think that we as America should just be allowed to go around and bomb civilians all over the world and that we shouldn't expect any blowback, you're living in fantasy world. That's not how it works. Something called natural law. Fair is fair, right? We are opening this can of worms for no reason. There's no value to this. There's no strategic importance to the sites we're hitting. 600 schools have been bombed by America directly on Israel. Our bombs, not Israel's bombs that we gave them, not Ukrainian bombs that we facilitate. Our bombs from Americans dropping them. I again just say that, like, the one thing I think keeping America, the American homeland, from being attacked right now is the fact that Americans are against this war and that Iran knows that. And they seem to actually be behaving in a strategic way. It's just like in Iran. If something in America got attacked and American civilians got attacked, the obvious and immediate result would be a massive push for more war in Iran, massive support for Trump. I mean, it would really benefit Iran's enemies if they attacked infrastructure. It's the same with us, only we're doing it. Only we are attacking that infrastructure. And it may be trying to piss Iran off because, you know, the people in America also know that the war is unpopular. They also want an attack on Americans. And they might not be confident enough they could pull off a false flag attack. They might be running the simulations and going, man, we could do a false flag attack. We could bomb a hospital in America and blame it on Iran, but nobody would believe it. Maybe the only way to do this is to actually get Iran to attack by actually provoking them, by actually just bombing their civilians in terror raids continuously, trying to get them to respond in kind. So just if you're a Christian, you understand, treat others as you like to be treated. Would you like to have your hospital bombed? Hmm? I mean, this is how I talk to my, you know, 5 and 3 year old. Do you like it when somebody just comes out of nowhere and hits you in the head with a toy for no reason? No, don't do it to other people, okay? Okay, children? So let's sit down with the U.S. military and say, we don't want our hospitals targeted by Iran, and there's no reason to bomb their hospitals. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why are you deliberately collapsing a country of 90 million people with no strategic point at all? People asking, is Trump planning a ground invasion of Iran on Good Friday? Certainly would fit the modus operandi. President Trump has suggested he could walk away from Iran and leave other nations to police the Strait of Hormuz, threatening that America, quote, won't be there to help you anymore. Traditional allies of the U.S. told one day that he does not need them, another day taunted his cowards, and then told they should hurry up and, quote, go to the Strait, are wondering how to respond or whether Trump is playing a different game altogether. This also, by the way, is not as naturally occurring as I think people want to believe either. I think all of this is actually motivated in like actually destroying Europe. Like we're sad about what's happening in Europe because we love Europe, right? I love the people of Europe. I want Europe to survive. I want it to be like the archival videos of old, you know, all the way back in like the early 2000s before it was destroyed and it just looked nice and pleasant and fun. And now it's just taken over by radical Islam. So we kind of make fun of Europe. We kind of tease Europe because they're weenies. They're a bunch of weenies over there, a bunch of socialist nap takers. Wouldn't know a hard day's work if it bit them in the butt. But that's all in good fun, and we actually love Europe and want Europe to survive and thrive and to free itself from the shackles of globalism that are destroying it. But as you read about people talking about NATO and talking about Europe helping us in Iran, there comes through this seething vitriol that I think is not healthy and is not, this isn't your classic like Americana, like, yeah, we're going to kick butt and those dumb Europeans don't know how to take care of themselves. Like, that's not what this is. This is something else. This is like, let's hamper and destroy Europe. And everything that's destroyed Europe has come from America. I mean, the climate change agenda, that's an American invention. And that's why they're struggling. That's why they can't, you know, keep food on the table, keep their energy up. The Middle East wars that created the migrant crisis, like America and the people that run America have been using America to destroy Europe for a while. And it seems like they're using Trump now, this whole, and again, it's sort of, all of this stuff is, how do I put it? It's just the monkey paw. Actually, it really is the monkey paw. It really, that is just the best explanation for this. President Monkey Paw. Because like, we want the UN to go away. We don't think the UN serves a valuable purpose. I mean, if the UN served a purpose at all, you would think it would be to protect people like the people in Gaza. Like, if there was a reason for the UN to exist, it was what Israel's been doing for the last 2.5 years, and they have done nothing. So it's like, why does it even exist? It does less than nothing. It really just gives you an outlet for people who think they're doing something. Oh, they charged Netanyahu with war crimes and genocide. And it's like, okay, well, nobody will do anything about it. So it doesn't really matter. It's just an exercise in futility. So then it's Trump like, you know, we're going to get rid of the UN. And we're all like, good, finally. And he's like, yeah, we're going to replace it with the Board of Peace. We're going to replace it with a technocratic, unelected, you know, permanent tyranny that's going to use Palantir to circumvent national law and just impose control through corporations. And it's like, well, that is a monkey paw result if I've ever seen one. Same thing with NATO. I don't like NATO. I don't think we need to be the babysitters for Western Europe. It's not an important or valuable use of our money or our resources or our lives. So like, yeah, we're going to get rid of NATO so we can destroy Europe. And it's like, okay, what the hell? We don't want Europe destroyed. These people do. A lot of these people do. And by the way, just like the plan I laid out for you yesterday, it's gone mainstream. Risky commando plan to seize Iran's uranium came at Trump's request. It's exactly like I told you, and that the bombing campaign so far from America seemed to be trying to create a corridor so that a small number of commandos can go in and seize the uranium, because that would be a big Hollywood-style success story that you could play up and act like represents the ultimate victory of this necessary war. But it might not go that well, but it does appear as though that speculation I was reading to you yesterday has been borne out in the actual information. I'm going to move on, but here's probably the most important headline yet out of Reuters. A war meant to break Iran could leave Tehran stronger. And the Gulf exposed. Yep, obviously. So again, it's like, okay, all of the goals Trump laid out, we haven't achieved. Anything you hear from anybody supporting this war has been just eviscerated over the last 24 hours. We're not taking the oil. We haven't mitigated their threat of a nuclear weapon. We haven't opened the Strait of Hormuz and might not ever open it. They're probably going to pursue nuclear weaponry even, you know, faster than they ever have before. The regime is probably going to have more control than they've ever had before. So whether you, you know, believe these goals or not, it's all wrong and none of it's happening.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it and you like it and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigly, our sponsor, has a really high quality private label, top selling brand that we were able to private label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high quality zeolite. Please do your own research.
and then go to theoliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding and eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Inner Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bovine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite detox formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now, please visit theoliveshowstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber. Lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time. So all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs. Cancel any time. $30 a month. Get $40 to spend in the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything, theoliveshowstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now, secure your Zeolite formula now at theoliveshowstore.com. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. It doesn't work? Tell me. Here it is, brother.
Cheers.
It looks just like the stuff from Doom, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Front lines of the information war. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith. Join the battle now on band.video and X worldwide.
Welcome back, folks. By the way, I haven't plugged once today. It's very stupid of me. We only get support when you go to thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. And, we have so many great reasons for you to go there and shop and get a fantastic product and help to keep us on the air. And I don't know. I was getting in arguments yesterday on X. It's Twitter drama. It's not important news, but it's interesting what people think about InfoWars. It's interesting the fantasies that they experience in their own heads about who we are and what we do. It's very strange. It's very strange. What I do is not all that complicated. I sit up here, I read the news, I show you videos, I take calls, I try to tell you the truth. And if you think that's valuable, I hope you can support us. We tell you exactly what's actually happening and try to discredit the lies and uplift the truth. And in exchange, we ask you go get a fantastic product at thealexjonesstore.com that you'll benefit from anyway. Very simple. Very, very simple. Meanwhile, everybody's got their own little pet theory about what we're really up to, what's really happening, who's really pulling the strings, where we really get our support. It's like, y'all, you know the court proceedings are public, right? You know that if you actually were curious about InfoWars, our entire, just everything about us has been, you know, literally adjudicated. You can find, and it's all public, it's all the evidence out there. It's public. You want to go find anything about it, it's out there. You don't think that in their going through all of our finances with a fine-tooth comb, they would have discovered any sort of foreign investment, anything like that? It's just, it's interesting because I understand that almost every other right-wing outlet is corrupt or controlled or perverted in some way. InfoWars is as pure as the driven snow. I don't know how we could be any more pure. Just 100%. And I know people listening to me, I would think understand that, because it's clear that people who don't like InfoWars literally have no idea who we are and what we do. But they don't like us. Oh, they're convinced that they're the authority on us. Never watched a show, and it's abundantly clear they've never watched a show. And then you've got other people, and just the reason this is in my mind is because there's this one comment in particular that was like something about InfoWars was only good while they were riding the MAGA train, and now that they can't, you know, milk that for all it's worth, then they're failing. And it's like, y'all, we are, first of all, more popular than we've ever been before, bigger than we've ever been, even though we've had a albatross around our neck, even though we've been weighed down, we've had like lead weights tied to our ankles for the last 5 years, we still are winning. I couldn't find it, but somebody posted a graph of Ben Shapiro's popularity on YouTube. It's gone completely down. Nobody watches him anymore. And this is a guy who's all, you know, sponsors and partnerships, and he's going on mainstream media, and YouTube is pushing his stuff, and they're still failing. InfoWars, they're stepping on our neck. They're kicking us off of all the platforms. We're still winning. We still succeed. We still thrive because we have this super secret weapon called the American people and thealexjonesstore.com. As long as the American people go to thealexjonesstore.com, or the people around the world go to thealexjonesstore.com, their free gift included in all orders, for the massive discounts, for the incredible products that you should be getting anyway, even if it's not for us. This stuff is really good. We just have the best possible quality in the best possible prices. And you support us on top of it. But like, do people not know? Do we? And this is the thing. I don't like bragging, and I don't think people like hearing people bragging, but this isn't bragging. I literally feel like I have to explain to people who have this misconception about InfoWars. It's like, we've been around for 30 years. We were around for 20 years before Donald Trump even showed up on the scene. And Donald Trump was made by us, not the other way around. Alex Jones made Donald Trump, not vice versa. We were against the war in Iraq, and we were right. We were exposing COVID, and we were right. We were against transgenderism and identity politics long before these words even entered into the American vocabulary, and we were right. And we've been right every time, and we're right now. So I don't know where this idea comes from that, like, I don't know, we're tied at the hip to MAGA or to Trump, but clearly it's people not watching the show. So thank you to everybody who actually does watch the show, who actually does understand where we're coming from and what we're doing here, and who supports us, because without you, we really will go away. We really will. And so the ball is in your court, folks. If you want us to stay on air, if you want us to be here to provide the platform that we do for the facts that we deliver, you got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. We have changed the world. We have permanently altered the landscape of information in America in a way that will never be reversed, never be undone, never be put back in the bottle. Okay? And we will continue to do that. We will continue to be out on the forefront. And, you know, that's why I'm thinking about the three-party thing, because it's just obvious right now that we need something, that something needs to happen. I don't know if it's a third party or whatever else, but everybody on our side is sort of looking around going, okay, what's next? Because we've been betrayed by Trump. MAGA has been taken over by Israel and is no longer fit for purpose. The Republican Party is dependent entirely on out-of-touch boomers who are brainwashed daily by Fox News. So we need something new, and it sure as hell ain't communism. It sure as hell ain't socialism. We need to recapture the American spirit. I think everybody sort of gets that there's a big vacuum to be filled right now, and it needs to be us. It needs to be us to fill it. We just need to figure out what to fill it with. Is it a third party? Is it a grassroots movement? Is it a separatist movement? I don't know. I'm sort of open to anything, but we need to be thinking about this, and we need to be plotting the future, because if we don't, somebody else will. You don't seize the initiative, then you're operating on somebody else's script. And we don't really do that very much. Ben Shapiro is losing 20,000 subscribers from his YouTube channel each month, according to Social Blade. So again, these are people who, you know, claim that InfoWars has done literally more popular than ever before. It's like astonishing how, you know, successful we've been recently. Not that we get to enjoy that, because we're still under bankruptcy proceedings. That'll change soon, and then you'll really see the rocket take off. So anyway, I don't want to ramble too much, but, and again, not even to brag, but like, it's a bummer to know that the media campaigns, the smear campaigns against InfoWars have been so effective, with many people on the right as well, who again just say things that just make it clear that they are just completely ignorant of InfoWars. And the reason why it's like sticking with me is because there's stuff like, there was a guy yesterday who was like, said something about, well, first of all, there's somebody that was like, we know what's really happening. Every segment you do is scripted. Every caller is an actor. And it's like, thank you for the compliment. Thank you. You know, I don't know if it's really that convincing. Do you think that this is scripted? Do you think that I'm not just talking extemporaneously here? Do you think there's a teleprompter? Do you think that we even have time to script stuff? I mean, the crew just comes in and delivers me stories and I read them live on air. Like, it's just all straight up front. So this is the thing. I'm just like, I don't even know how they would come up with this idea. It's all scripted, the caller. Like, okay, if you think the callers are fake, why don't you call in? Why don't I give out the number and you can call in and you can see for yourself if we screen callers or if we tell people what to say. You can do it yourself. You can find all this stuff up yourself. This is the strange part, is people just are ignorant, and then they just fill up the vacuum of their ignorance with fantasy and then walk around telling their fantasy as if it's real. Yeah, it's crazy. That's stuff like that. There's another guy talking about, he's like, InfoWars debates, saying something about how we like rig debates. I'm like, we don't even have debates. What are you talking about? Occasionally we'll have an interview that's sort of framed as a debate, but you know, I think we've had maybe one or two actual debates with like Destiny, but like even how, you know, but it's just funny, because it's like you're claiming that we are corrupt in doing something that we don't even do the thing. We don't have debate. What are you talking about? We should have more debates. We will have more debates. But it's just funny to me that people are like, InfoWars rigs their debates. We don't even do debates. What are you talking about? What? Like, I did the flat earth debate. That was just me and him. Like, there was no moderator. And I gave him plenty of time. I treat him as well as anybody could ask, right? So anyway, it's frustrating being like literally the only outlet that exists that is just totally unencumbered by any ulterior motive or pressure or anything. And it's just me and you. You know, it's me and the audience, and I just try to tell you the truth, because I assume that's what you want. I assume you don't want me lying to you about things that make you feel good, right? I assume that the value I add is that I can tell you the truth and have a platform to tell a truth that nobody else will tell, even if it's obvious, right? I don't know. It's all very strange. It's all very strange. Yeah, quartering. Whatever. I don't want to get into Twitter drama It doesn't actually mean anything, but it is sort of indicative of the wider delusions at play. That one was a weird one. I literally invite the guy on to debate, and he thinks I'm attacking him. I'm like, what? It's weird. Rex wants to debate quartering, and I'm like, I'll host. Quartering, you in? And he's just like, why are you attacking me? I was like, okay, man. Sorry. Sensitive boy. Okay. I do have more to talk about. I have infinite things to talk about when it comes to Iran, but I want to move on. But at the same time, it's like involved in everything else, right? So, you know, I've got things like this. Clip 41 here. This is Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, talking about, you know, why Iran is so bad, why it's worth it to go to war with them, you know, having the classic and oft-repeated example of the fact that Iran, just like Hamas, by the way, you know, doesn't spend money on their people. They spend money on war and how tragic and bad and evil that is. That's why we're at war with them. Let's listen to Marco Rubio say it.
And at the end of the day, I think that if there are people in Iran who now, given everything that's happened, are willing to move in a different direction for their country, that would be great. Imagine an Iran that instead of spending their wealth, billions of dollars supporting terrorists or weapons, had spent that money helping the people of Iran, you'd have a much different country. So we are always hopeful that that would exist over there.
Good point. It's a good point. It's very interesting. You know, these evil Iranians spending money on war rather than their own people. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to war with somebody like that? Anyway, here's Trump yesterday.
Don't send any money for daycare because the United States can't take care of daycare.
Oh, right.
That has to be up to a state. We can't take care of daycare. We're a big country. We have 50 states. We have all these other people. We're fighting wars. We can't take care of daycare. You got to let a state take care of daycare, and they should pay for it, too. They should pay. They have to raise their taxes, but they should pay for it. And we could lower our taxes a little bit to them to make up. But it's not possible for us to take care of daycare. Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things, they can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We have to guard the country. But all these little things, all these little scams that have taken place, you have to let states take care of them, Russell, and you have to do it.
You know, like, there's a couple things about it. It's like, okay, so we're going to war with Iran because they're so evil because they spend money on war and not their people. Only we can't spend money on our people because we have to spend money on the war against Iran. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. I also, you know, my interpretation of what he just said was he's like, it shouldn't be the federal government's job to take care of it. It absolutely is the federal government's job to take care of it, not to provide daycare, but to punish the people scamming the daycare centers. What's happening right here is like, does he not know this? There's a story today about California, but like Minnesota is the obvious example, but the state employees are the ones doing the fraud. They're the ones doing the fraud. So it seems like this is Trump getting frustrated at the fact that people are bugging his DOJ to go after fraud. That was my interpretation of his statement right there. I don't even think that was about him being like, we don't want to pay for daycare. And these people going, hey, this fraud is destroying our country. And he's going, that's up to the states to do. I'm starting wars with Iran. I'm spending $200 billion to make Iran more dangerous, okay? I don't have time to go after fraud. Like, is my obligation as the head law enforcement chief executive of the country? Am I wrong? Because, like, originally when I watched that clip, all I saw was the, you know, we're not paying for daycare part. But I don't think he was talking about paying for daycare there. He's talking about it's not the federal government's job to stop states from being defrauded. But when you're in Minnesota and the governor is involved and the attorney general, who would be the one at the state level to charge fraud, is in fact caught on hidden recording collaborating with the fraudsters and saying in no uncertain terms that he would make sure to stop the investigation into the fraudsters in exchange for support from the Somali community. That is a federal crime. Like, the federal government is now the superior authority that can come in and lay down the law. So, like, this is why nothing's getting done. So this is even, again, and, you know, Trump's made other statements. Like, they're like, yeah, we're going to have to get rid of all these, like, you know, good things for Americans because, you know, we want to focus on the war. And for some reason, they think this is like a midterm argument. They're like, for midterms, we're going to really promote the, you know, military funding side of things. And it's like, so again, ridiculous, ridiculous, ridiculous. Oh, it's exactly the right amount. Providing universal child care would be $200 billion. Look at that. What do you know? What do you know? But of course, we could afford absolutely everything. I mean, we could live in paradise if we just enforced basic law and stopped ourselves from being just systematically bankrupted at every pass. And once again, is this not like, can we not make some agreements here? Can we not come to some understandings with people across the aisle? I don't think it's the government's job to provide childcare. But tell you what, you want to have a childcare program similar to somewhere like Finland, right? You want to provide every new mother with a crib and the stuff she needs for the first year, you know, maybe a nurse that she can, you know, have at her beck and call to help her. Like, all right, tell you what, we'll provide basic child care is just a, you know, general service for the betterment of the society. Not my favorite thing, but I'm willing to accept that in exchange. Can we shut the border? Like, can we make these deals? Can these types of deals possibly be made? Do we have the ability to both support the American people and enforce American laws? Or are we stuck in the false dichotomy that says you either have to be a heartless warmonger or a bleeding heart retard liberal? Can we shatter this paradigm for once and all? Please, for the love of God. For the sake of our country and the continuing existence of our people, can we do normal things? Just normal things. Starting a war in Iran with no purpose or end goal, that's not a normal thing to do. That's a very abnormal thing to do. What would be normal would be the government enforcing laws, the government maybe providing, you know, basic welfare for people actually in need. Can we, could we, is it possible that we could come together on this? Of course not. Why would it? Well, how could we? How could we when the left seems to see any vulnerability in our system as an excuse to just rob everyone and destroy everything? So, yeah, Trump says it's not possible for the U.S. to pay for Medicare, Medicaid, and daycare. We're fighting wars. But they're also not taking care of the veterans. They're also cutting off a lot of veteran benefits right now. So, they'll get people injured or killed in the war, and then they'll be on their own because we just don't have money to deal with the consequences of our actions. So again, I mean, it's just, it's all tied in together. Because we have, you know, what's going on in California with just massive, unrelenting and outrageous fraud. Gavin Newsom's empire of fraud. The roads are crumbling. Mismanaged wildfires have turned neighborhoods into ash. Drug addiction and homelessness have metastasized, turning parts of Los Angeles and San Francisco into no-go zones. And the cost of living crisis is pricing middle-class taxpayers out of basic necessities like groceries and gas. Even as the state spends billions on welfare programs that never seem to lift anyone out of poverty. Californians are beginning to ask, where is all this money going? On paper, it funds hospitals, universities, schools, prisons, infrastructure, and other public services. But beneath the surface, something else is happening that California Governor Gavin Newsom does not want you to see. Massive, systemic, brazen fraud. We conducted interviews with public officials, fraud experts, and political figures. We reviewed hundreds of pages of government reports, state audits, criminal indictments, and other public records on California fraud, from unemployment insurance to Medicaid to failed homelessness initiatives and welfare programs. Seemingly every state program has been compromised by criminals. The best estimate suggests that, on the governor's watch, fraudsters, scammers, and organized crime rings have stolen at least $180 billion from taxpayers. Welcome to Gavin Newsom's empire of fraud. And he goes on to explain that the people who are committing this fraud are just the very people who are in charge of the programs. So, of course, they're not going to actually do anything about it. That's why we need the government, federal government, to step in and hold these people to account. But we won't. So, it'll just keep going. And I guess we'll be outraged about it. And occasionally one fraudster might be arrested and they'll, you know, have to return 1/100th of the money they stole. Slap on the wrist. You're free to go. That's basically where we're at. And it is a very, very damaging thing. The problem is that even when we're being robbed to no end, even when our government is basically entirely designed just to rob from the rich and give to the poor, and not in a beneficent way, I should say, rob from the productive and give to the unproductive, it's not good enough, and it will never be good enough for the lefties. Let's go to clip number 16, where we can see Zoran Mamdani being consumed by his own revolution. Let's watch.
We all voted for you because you promised to stand with working people and end the abusive 24-hour workday.
We have to end the 24-hour workday.
Mamdani, cumple tu promesa.
Zoran, it is now week 3 of home care workers sitting in. Why have you said nothing?
Instead, you're parroting the racist, sexist lie that immigrant women choose 24-hour workdays.
Mamdani, come outside.
So they get paid to stay home. There's no 24-hour workday. This is subsidies that says that if you have an elderly person in your home, you can be paid to watch them and provide elder care. And so they basically want more money for that. It'll never be enough. It'll never be enough. It'll never be good enough because these people are awful. Let's go to clip number 39. Here's the decent people that this all falls down to. Let's watch.
I feel like only in America can you need medical assistance that you can't afford to get. And in order to get government help, you have to make under a certain amount. So if you're someone who's like makes $60,000 a year, you don't qualify for any fucking help, but you can't actually afford to get your child the services that they fucking need. But if I quit my job and I go work for McDonald's, I can live off the government and then she can have the help that she needs. Make it make sense. Make it make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But it's set up that way. $60,000. She says she makes $60,000 a year. It's not easy to survive on $60,000 a year with a family in an American city. She's not rolling in the dough. She is lower, barely middle income in America, which means she gets screwed by absolutely everybody in every different way. The rich get all the subsidy they can handle through their corporate cronyism. The poor get everything paid for. Don't have to do anything to supply it. It's the decent, normal, productive, average American that is constantly screwed from every direction, on purpose, by design, because they hate us. It's not complicated.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Our economy has not been destroyed. We're still one of the biggest economies in the world.
What is the economy here? What's it based on?
What do you mean?
Like what's the British economy? I look at the economy of, I don't know, Wales in 1900, and it's like, it's coal. They mines, they dig coal, people burn it. That's what their economy is. Look at the economy of Sheffield or Birmingham 100 years ago. Well, of course, it was steelmaking. What's the economy?
There's still a lot of manufacturing in the UK. A lot of
But as a percentage, your economy...
Well, percentage of manufacturing could be a lot less.
A lot less. It's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Right. So
we still have one of the biggest economies in the world. Now,
but what is that economy based on?
A lot of things.
Okay. What's the main one?
Well, the city is a lot of manufacturing.
That's the main one?
Well, there's a lot of technology stuff going on. There's a lot of scientific stuff going on. There's a lot of all sorts of industry.
You haven't mentioned the biggest one by far.
Well, go on.
Was lending money to people. It's banking.
Banking. Yeah. Okay.
That's number one. We're in the city of London right now.
Sure.
How many things are being made in the city of London other than debt?
It's one of the financial hubs of the world. We're right in the city here.
I know we're sitting in the city of London right now, run by City Con.
Right. But again, it's not as bad as people think it is.
But hold on. Is that really an economy? If your economy is real estate, that's London's other big economic center, is buying and selling and leasing pieces of property again and again to different people. Nothing's being created.
But that's not true. That's not true. We are creating things here. A lot of things.
Like what?
There's a lot of money.
Baratta. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of money because people from around the world stash their money here because it's a system based on fairness.
There's a lot of manufacturing, not as much as there was 80 years ago.
How much is in London, man? Your biggest city, the dominant city.
I don't know the percentages. So we have to check.
Pretty much, unless you're talking about like burritos being manufactured or whatever, I don't think there's really any.
The bigger problem for us is not what economy we're doing. It's how we manage the economy.
So it doesn't matter where the money comes from?
No, it does. But successive governments have dragged us to a place where we have almost zero growth. Without growth, you can't have a successful, thriving country.
That's not true. Have you been to Japan? It's like the most successful, thriving country in the world. It has had no growth for a long time. Not real growth. And we've gotten these lectures from the bankers for like 30 years. Japan is dying. You ever go to Japan? You get their 4-year-old girls in the subway alone. There's not one speck of litter in all of Tokyo, and it's one of the biggest cities in the world, 12 million. It's an incredible society. It's the opposite of New York, London, Baltimore, Detroit. It's incredible. I know you've been there, and I know you've had these naughty, forbidden thoughts like, wait a second, I thought we dropped a bomb on them. How are they so great?
No. I like going to Tokyo.
No growth. How'd they do that with no growth?
No.
I was assured by libertarian economics, if we had no growth, things would be bad. Look at this.
I like going to Japan, but I wouldn't swap it for London.
Right. Fair. You're English. That's kind of the point. Right. This is your homeland.
I genuinely do love London.
No, I bet you do.
When I lived in America full time, I really missed a lot of the
I hope so. This is where your ancestors are from. I get it. Yeah. That's the whole point. That's the whole argument I'm making. It matters where you're from. The culture really matters. It's not about growth. It's not about any of this crap. It's about, am I on the same page with my neighbor? Do we have something in common? Do we have the same gut instincts about things? Those are the most important questions there are.
But economic prosperity raises all the ships.
Has that been true here?
It should be true.
Is there more poverty in London now than there was 40 years ago?
There's more child poverty.
Yes, I know.
In fact, the child poverty rate is worse here than it is in America.
A lot worse.
The general poverty rate.
So how is this so great even though they have Baratta?
The general poverty rate is actually lower than it is in America, but child poverty specifically.
Is there anything that matters other than child poverty?
Probably not.
Not really. So
I agree.
Look, I'm not slagging on, I love your country. I really thought a lot about this since I was so mean during that conversation. I was just wounded because I feel like the destruction of Britain has effects on our entire Anglo civilization.
Do you actually look out and see a destroyed country?
No, this is beautiful. I mean, this is, again, this is the rich part of town.
I could take you to Manchester, Birmingham, Glasgow, Cardiff. I could take you to-
How are they doing?
They're all doing great. Much better than you think. Honestly, Tucker, you'll walk
That's
around
crazy.
And see.
That is crazy. What Tucker Carlson needs to do is get Piers Morgan in a costume, put him in a disguise, and go walk around the streets of Britain. Piers Morgan is ferried from one place to the next with a personal driver and a private jet. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. Here's what's actually happening in the UK. You ready for this one? You're not. I'm telling you right now, you're not. I've just tried to go to M&S on Chaplin High Street. It's flanked by police who inform me all the shops on High Street are closed as they are being looted by teenagers. Lawful citizens can't shop. Private businesses closed. Youth still wrecking havoc. I'm sorry, Mage can't go down that road. The youth are looting. The youth are looting right now. So we police are guarding them while they do.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you gotta do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheOxygenStore.com to get T3 now available and methylene blue at TheOxygenStore.com.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final hour of the War Room, and I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. I do want to get new callers. I love our regular callers, but I want to hear from some unknown voices. So if you've ever called in and gotten on the show, withhold your call for a second, maybe in the next segment. We can open up the phone calls for everybody. But if you've never called in, or if you've never gotten on the air, if you've called in and been on hold, now is the time to call in. Give us a call. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. And let me just tell you right now, we do not screen calls. The call screener will answer your call, ask for your name, where you're from, and what you want to talk about. Just tell them the truth. And if you say Harrison's an idiot and he's wrong and I want to tell him how wrong he is, I'll probably go to you first. So the thing that annoys us is when people call in saying they want to talk about one thing and then they actually want to talk about another. Just tell us what you want to talk about and we'll put you on the air. Okay, because I'm very confident in everything I believe. I'm not afraid of being challenged. It's actually one of the brilliant things about doing a live radio show and having people call in. Sort of keeps me on my toes. I really can't try to get away with anything and not expect somebody to call me out on it. So that's why I got to be up front about literally everything all the time. So we'll go to those calls just as soon as they come in. I do have some good news here. I do have some good news that we should all be celebrating. This is something actually people have been working on for a long time, and it's a very good, you know, I love these sort of simple solutions that solve really big problems. In this case, it may not solve the problems, but it's definitely going to help quite a bit. And it's basic transparency. It's transparency in the medical field. And it's a new initiative by RFK Jr., clip number 11 here. This is great. This in and of itself will do a lot to clamp down on the exploitation of the medical industry and the insurance industry, because basically they're making hospitals be transparent about what they charge for what. Let's watch.
This week we passed new regulations that require hospitals to post their pricing. So we're going to have price transparency and the insurance companies. So we're going to have price transparency. If you go to a restaurant, you can see what the price is before you order a meal. If you go to a car dealer and he tells you, you can buy this car, but I'm not going to tell you what the price is until after you bought it, you would not buy that car. But that's how every hospital in this country works.
But it's actually, it's worse than that, right? Because it's collusion between the hospitals and the insurance company. And basically they can charge whatever they want. And it kind of doesn't matter because the people aren't the ones receiving the bill, right? If you charge me $12 for an aspirin, I might get pissed off and be like, what the hell? And demand an answer for it. But if it's just sort of a obscure entry in a insurance settlement, and they can just charge whatever they want. And there's been examples of this where, you know, a bill for $25,000 comes in and the person calls the hospital and goes, can you actually jot out like what I'm being charged for? I need like a, you know, an invoice with all of this stuff detailed. And suddenly the bill comes back. It turns out it's only $10,000. Like they literally will charge way over and above what they normally do because they can and because the insurance companies work with them and to get it done. So hopefully they won't be able to do this anymore. They'll have to actually tell you what they charge for things and not have it all be obscure and exploitative. He says, beginning today, April 1st, HHS will require hospitals executives to attest that they posted, that their posted prices are accurate. If hospitals mislead patients or fail to disclose actual prices, we will hold them accountable. Transparency drives competition and competition lowers healthcare costs for every American. Transparency is kind of never a bad thing, really, at the end of the day. Turns out like a lot of problems in our country and our world can be solved by just demanding that people tell the truth and then holding their feet to the fire, holding a, you know, putting them in the sunlight and revealing whether they're being honest. All right, let's go. I came in, the screen's a little small, so I don't even know what you want to talk about. Let's go to line number one here. I think his name's Joey. Do I see Joey in Mississippi? Do I have that right?
I'm Joey, but I'm a girl in Mississippi.
Hello, Joey. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I wanted to talk about how they keep trying to raise taxes for schools and for child care and for health care, just everything, everything. And I feel like what they need to do is actually let one parent stay home and just it erases tax burden for children, for yep. schools, for child care, even for medical stuff, because if you're home with your kid, they're not next to another kid. It's going to give them the flu because their parents don't take care of them
mm-hmm.
and send them off sick. So I just feel like maybe just trying to go back to one parent working and lower the tax burdens on all these people and just make our economy back to where we can afford that, because it's just so expensive. You can't even afford insurance, even off of like just one income, just paying for health care and insurance. Like one income isn't going to do that and have the other income pay for everything else.
Yeah.
It's not happening anymore.
No, and it's been designed like that on purpose. They, you know, two incomes means two times the tax burden. Mom has to work, so you got to put the kid in a daycare, so you got to pay the daycare that they can tax it then. I mean, every time, you know, you make an exchange, they get a little bit more. And of course, right now, at best possible scenario for a, you know, middle income American is you work a third of the year for somebody else. Now, if you were, you know, forced to go work in a field for 3 months in a row and not be paid for it, you would be infuriated. You wouldn't stand for it. But because they just take a little off the top every day, you won't revolt. But yeah. That's the lowest possible, like purely just what portion of your income is taxed. It's like 33%. When you actually look into how taxes make everything more expensive and how every step of the, you know, production process, it's taxed more and more. We're really spending like half of our waking lives working directly for other people, working for the government to steal our money and give it to people who hate us and don't provide anything. So I think you're exactly right. One good thing I've seen is, James Fishback, running for governor of Florida. Just yesterday, I saw he came out with a proposal saying that if you homeschool your kids, you should be paid what your kid would be, you know, paid for in the school. You know, whatever amount of money that your kid would cause the school, they would just pay you. So if you stay at home and teach your kid, they would send you a $13,000 check, I think is the amount that he said yesterday. So that would be huge and makes total sense, because it is unfair that, you know, if you don't want to be indoctrinated in the public school system, it's this major burden. You have to have a spouse that doesn't work, and you have to put in all this time and effort to, you know, do something that is available for free for everybody else. And it's unfair. I love this suggestion from Fishback. If you as a parent decide to pull your child out of public school, I don't believe you should be capped at $9,000 a year. You should get the full amount. It should be $16,000 or $17,000. And of course, yeah, you know, you should have to actually prove that you're actually teaching your kid. We don't want a bunch of people just taking advantage of this, like they'll take advantage of everything. But I like that idea. We got to do something to get back to a more sensical, you know, family structure. What do you think about that suggestion, Joey?
I like it. I have to use Christian Health Ministries because we were spending $1,200 a month on insurance for just me and my daughter. My husband had his through work. And that's with I think it was like $6,000 deductible too on each one of us.
Oh my gosh.
So I was a lunch lady and I only brought home, I think it was like $600 a month because that job actually made it to where I didn't have to pay for childcare and I could have insurance through them. So I ended up quitting that job and going with Christian Health Ministries. And now I pay cash price, which is a lot cheaper than insurance if anybody is even considering that, because I would used to have to pay a $40 copay to go to the doctor with insurance, and now I pay $60 and then a $20 for a strep test. So it's $80 rather than $1,200 a month for her once a month sickness.
Well, that's great. And this is an opportunity for, you know, sort of private club types of operations like that to fill the gap where the insurance companies and the hospitals are not doing it. So yeah, that's a great resource. But yeah, it's, you know, like the lady we just played where who can defend that situation where you've got a woman who makes $60,000 a year, therefore doesn't, qualify for any help, like can't really afford good insurance, can't afford medical care. I mean, it's brutal, and it just represents a totally dysfunctional system. And we showed the chart yesterday of the rise of, you know, administrators rather than the rise of physicians. We are dealing with like layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of dysfunction where we kind of have to like scrap the whole thing and try to start over. And at the very least, scrap Obamacare, because everything has gotten significantly more expensive as a consequence of that, just like we said it would when it happened. Thank you so much for the call, Joey. And it is not a great situation anybody here in America is in. And this is just the added pain of what Trump is doing, is that none of this stuff is being solved while we focus on overseas adventures. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Righteous Rod in Arizona. Go ahead, Righteous. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Good evening, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Good evening. Hear you loud and clear. Thanks for calling in.
Righteous. I want to give a plug on the methylene blue. I was a little hesitant to try it. I heard some good things from my brother, so I placed an order not very long ago. The shipment came in real quick. Like, the site is awesome. Thank you guys for doing that. It looks great. It's clean. Just for the longest time, I was having trouble, like, getting out of the mental space a little bit, really foggy, hard to learn things. Like, for example, I train combat sports. When the coach goes over stuff, it's real quick. All right, you understand? Okay, let's go. Boom, boom. And, like, immediately just forget it, right? I start taking this methylene blue. I have no problem remembering the combinations. I'm, like, helping people and all that. And I just feel really great mentally. I think the methylene blue is great. Everybody should have it. And it's really beneficial. It really, really has great effect.
Wow, thank you. I'm so glad it's helped you out so much. I mean, I say it all the time, whether it's methylene blue or the iodine, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you. I mean, did you get it because you thought, hey, I have brain fog, maybe this will help? Or what were you expecting it to do? And did it do what you expected?
Absolutely. So for the longest time, it's just like getting up in the morning, just even getting up and going. Or like you're saying with the brain fog, is just I could be talking to somebody and my mind just goes like elsewhere. I forget the conversation. But with this methylene blue, like I actually, you know, feel like I'm being a little bit more endearing towards people. I don't know. Maybe it's just the neurons firing at a higher rate. Maybe it's helping clean out the nuclei is working overtime, but like has a boost with this stuff, but it works. So on the bottle, it says like 20 drops. I've just been doing like 10 or 11 drops. Cause I mean, I don't want to turn into Alex Jones, go in my backyard and let out a war cry. You know?
Yeah. You don't want to be shooting lightning at people when you don't expect it. Yeah. You got to take it easy on this stuff. Look, methylene blue is one of these products where like you do have to make sure you're not taking other medicine. Cause it's extremely powerful and it can have some, if you take SSRIs or I think, amphetamines like Adderall, like it can interact with those, because they I don't know if they do similar things, but it's powerful. Like, it's not something that, you really, you know, need to take twice as much as you're told. Like, maybe take half as much as, has on the bottle. Start with that, because it really is powerful. We don't sell you bunk, man. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for the plug. Always appreciate that, but probably not what you really called in about, right? What else you got for us?
Yes, sir. So I would like to just address the travesty that is the resignation of Joe Kent, okay? Oh. So, I mean, I agree with you guys. And by the way, I just want to say, long-time listener, first-time caller, I loved. I started every morning with the one that is Mr. Harrison Smith for many years. And I just, you know, I got you guys in my ear all day, and it's awesome. I really appreciate you guys spreading the truth. Actually, I also did sign up for the Alex Jones VIP, so it's a little bit of contribution to you guys every month. But it's also super dope that there's like a store credit that's issued. So it's just like, hey, let's just buy more stuff. Let's get the word out there, you know. So there's that.
Now, wait, hold on, Regisrod. Did we tell you to say this? See, I got people out there spreading rumors that we screen calls and that our callers aren't real. And here you are giving us a plug like a dang professional. You are a real customer, right? And you just called in and we don't know each other. I just want you to confirm that on the record.
110%. And I guess I'll plug one more time with that methylene blue. You brought the water boy into fruition, right? When he's talking and he's like, well, mama says, happiness comes out of rays of sunshine when you pee in the blue. Well, thanks, Methylene Blue and the AlexJonesStore.com. I really am peeing the blue.
That's great. I love it. That was a great plug. And I know people are like, they pay. It's like, no, people just actually love they're just actually really good products. But I thank you so much for your support. Like, we honestly can't do it without you. And we know what it's like, and we know it's not easy. You know, not everybody has extra money to spend on things like them, like InfoWars, which is why we want to give you a great product. It's, you know, we respect the sacrifice it takes to support us, and we want to return the favor and make it not a sacrifice. We want to make it something that actually benefits you, which is why we sell great products. But so what are your thoughts on Joe Kent? You think it's a bad thing that he resigned?
I just think it's a travesty that our commander in chief just, you know, went up and did a 180. I've been trying to game plan this with people in conversations. Like, what happened? Was he a dark horse? Was he like a Trojan horse? Or Netanyahu has got to have something either on him, which I don't think so, but it's more likely like maybe Jared Kushner, you know, something having to do with the Israel Accords. I don't know. But with a man of this stature in terms of Joe Kent and his accolades, his achievements, his intellect, our commander-in-chief doesn't want to, you know, take any type of information from him. I mean, that's a travesty, and all I got to say is I think the man's name is Jim Clark and Joe Kent. If we got them on the same ticket, it's like Clark Kent, man. That's been on my mind for weeks. Like, Superman, it's definitely what this country needs. Like, let's get that guy in. Let's just, from the top down, all SF dudes, let's go. Because you know what? They're the ones that, you know, they're train the armies in the other countries. They'll just go get a group of regular people like us, never met before, and in 6 months they're killing machines, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But not from like a war aspect. I'm just saying they know how to get things done, get this country back on the right track. So I say Joe Kent for president, man.
Amen, absolutely. And the dude looks like Superman, like straight up. He looks like 100%. Clark Kent. It's wild.
And for the record, so everyone listening, sorry to cut you off, sir, but for everyone, Alex Jones does the people on time. Anyways. You guys did not pay me. I am just a true believer. I am very, very grateful that you guys do what you do. You put out this information. It's like I have no choice but to support you guys. That's just how I feel. I appreciate what you do. I know it's taken a lot of time. I'm very honored. Maybe we'll call again soon, but I at least wanted to do it once before.
Before we go down.
Down and everything, yes, sir.
Well, thank you for doing it. No, this was a great call, man. I do hope you call in more. This was excellent. Of course, I got to give you extra time if you plug, but that's it. But not everybody can use that trick, all right? I want to get to more calls. I got a lot of callers holding, so we'll try to go a little quicker from now on. But no, you're exactly right. And I was amazed at the quality of response from the veterans after Joe Kent resigned. There were a couple guys. Maybe it's Clark who you're talking about. I retweeted a guy because he's just like, I'm just like a, I'm a special forces guy. I'm not like a good talker. And then he just goes off at like 10 minutes, just like the most hardcore, amazing, you know, diatribe. And it's just like, dude, this guy should be in charge. Like, why are these guys not in charge? I know that just being able to kill people doesn't automatically mean you're the best leader of men, but it's like there's something there. There's something there. They're men that can handle themselves, that aren't fearful, that, you know the risk that they're putting soldiers in when they go to war. Like, they really understand the world in a way that some of these number crunchers just don't. And it kind of reminds me of the, I bring it up all the time, but the Starship Troopers fantasy sort of fascistic world that they created. The whole thing was that you had to be a veteran to vote, and the entire government was only veterans, and you had to like suffer as a veteran to even get any authority, because there's something to that. Rome was like that as well with the cursus honorum. So yeah, man, these veterans, especially the special forces guys, they're smart. They're the real deal. And people like Joe Kent deserve all the respect in the world. Thank you so much for that call, Righteous Rod. Let's go to Andrew in Maryland now. Andrew, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
How you doing, Harrison?
I'm doing well, thank you. I can I get a little feedback there if we can turn down the radio or just get the phone right to your ear, please.
Can you hear me better?
Sounds great. Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to talk about the Pam Bondi stuff. I think she finally got what she deserved. Man, she promised so much stuff about releasing the Epstein files, and she just kept letting stuff build up. Like, I'm just happy about that. Yeah,
it's been a disappointment. But the thing is, what we know behind the scenes is a lot of that was Todd Blanch, but Todd Blanch is replacing her. So monkey's paw, right?
So he's not really any better. It's actually probably worse, isn't it?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And also, too, I heard the last caller. I just wanted to let you know, too, like I am a real customer, too.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. What do you like? From the store.
I buy it. I like the methylene blue. I like the colostrum. The methylene blue, I take like 10 drops one day, 15 the next day. Then sometimes I don't take it for a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to build up my tolerance to it. So it seems like it works better when you don't like overdo it. Like,
interesting.
For me at least.
That's good.
Some people like to take, like, I know some people take 30, 40 drops. Like, I only need, like, 10 usually gets me through the day.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for your support, Andrew. Of course, we couldn't do it without you, and we sincerely mean it. Thank you for supporting us in every way that you do. Even if that's just sharing the links or telling your friends about it, man, it's all very important. Final thoughts before we go to commercial break here, Andrew?
Yeah. I'm just hoping that you guys keep having success and for worse. And I spread information around. I try to keep your guys' name like around people in my family. A lot of people in my family really don't believe in the stuff I believe in, but I go my own way.
Well, you know, good for you, and you know, you got to keep trying. You got to keep trying to make those arguments and get through to people. And it's funny to me. It's like, you know, people don't believe what I believe. It's like, I just believe the truth. So I don't know what you believe, because I just believe what's actually happening. Everybody else seems to believe in fantasy world nonsense. I don't even know where they're getting their information, but it ain't right. And we can prove that. You know, like, I got a video of Dianne Feinstein from like 1993, and she's asked about birthright citizenship, and they're like, should an illegal alien kid be a citizen? She's like, no, of course not. That's ridiculous. And it's stuff like that to where it's like, you can get all kind of confused and muddled up in the modern world, and everybody's got a different opinion on things and a different context, this and this. But it's like, no, we're just right. Like, this is just all very normal. It's not really a debate. Everybody used to understand that this was the case. And it's not that we're Democrats now. It's that the Democrats have gone insane, and things that were very normal for all of human history in the last 20 years have become verboten, and like, they're just insane. So like, we're the normal ones, and we're right. I know you're the-
the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. I've given this to 500 people. Only 3 people didn't feel it right away. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. And you said earlier, when I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother.
He's cheers.
It looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
Personally, I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. I was telling you, I've had a little bit of a cold for the past few days, under-rested. It felt like my brain was working at 50% capacity, just felt slow. And now, what's it been, a half hour or so, it feels like I'm back up to 80%. So, yeah, that's my experience. Feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them.
You and me? Honest, I know you will be, because we're always trying to find a better methylene blue. If you've got one that's better, you said you've taken it before. Did you feel the same thing with the other methylene blue?
No, with other ones I've tried, I didn't have a perceptible difference. Yeah, didn't notice anything.
Well, I got to tell you, like it. Bigly, I said, go find me the best. They said, this place doesn't sell it to people. They sell it for medical dyes for arteries instead of like iodine, radioactive iodine. They use this for tracking blood clots or something. And I said, okay, great. So you got to deal with them? I said, well, let me get it. And I'd taken a bunch of different brands before. It didn't really do much. I was like, brrr, when I did it. And I was like, so they hit a home run with this. So you're saying you've taken, we didn't talk about this beforehand. We just asked you. You've taken others before, though, did not feel like this.
Yeah, that's true. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I like it. I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it.
And yeah, my understanding of, you mentioned this, methylene blues, they're not all created equal. Some, I believe, are like a fish aquarium grade.
Yeah.
But they sell it to humans. So what you found, I'm stoked to really...
Look, I love Bigly. Their rule is go out and get the best. Most of our products are private label. It's already top rated. So I said, get the best methylene blue. So I think we've got the best. JP's here. Didn't even know this backstory that you all know. You just saw what just happened to him. It's amazing. Get yours now. TheAlexShowStore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of the War Room for this Thursday broadcast. We'll go directly after your calls once again. I do want to... Wow. The average new hire was 42 years old in 2025. Yeah. Everything, is broken and sucks. From Time Magazine, just published this afternoon, inside Trump's search for a way out of the Iran war. They say when, Donald Trump was in the Oval Office during the third week of the Iran war, when a group of his most trusted advisors came in to deliver some unwelcome news. His longtime pollster, Tony Fabrizio, had conducted surveys that indicated the war Trump launched was growing increasingly unpopular. Gas prices had surged past $4 per gallon, stock markets had tumbled to multi-year lows, and millions of Americans were preparing to take to the streets in protest. 13 American service members had been confirmed killed. Some of Trump's key public supporters were criticizing a conflict with no clear end in sight. It fell on White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles and a small group of aides to tell the president that the longer the war dragged on, the more it would threaten public support and Republicans' prospects in November's midterm elections. For Trump, it says, the stark warning was unsettling. The president has begun many recent mornings watching video clips compiled by military officers of battlefield successes, according to senior administration officials. He also told advisors that being commander-in-chief, to eliminate the nuclear threat posed by Iran could be one of his signature achievements. But Wiles, according to two White House sources, was concerned aides were giving the president a rose-colored view of how the war was being perceived domestically, telling Trump what he wanted to hear instead of what he needed to hear. She urged colleagues, the officials say, to be more forthright with the boss about the political and economic risks. Okay, so just once again, our, you know, supposition, our observation is confirmed by inside sources, as if you needed people to tell you this. Which again, people think we're stupid for being like, yeah, Trump is being tricked. He's being kept encased in a false reality. We had it from Joe Kent. We had it from people, you know, behind the scenes. People still want to, you know, act like it's not true. It's true, you guys. I mean, just you can not listen to us if you want, but like, we're always right. So you just listen to us. that's my argument. Okay. Out to your phone calls. We'll get to as many as we can. Josh from South Dakota. Go ahead, Josh. You are on the airline 9. Go ahead.
Hey, Harrison. I've been hard on you in the last few months. I'm tired of the black pilling, and I know it's necessary to hold our leaders accountable. I was a Ted Cruz guy, shamelessly before, but I got behind Trump and I got behind him 3 times. I was a co-chair of the Republican committee in Lacapral County, Minnesota. I'm now a refugee of Minnesota, leaving the state, which is a lost cause, for South Dakota. And I've talked to legislators in the state and in Minnesota. I've been here my entire life, 48 years, and this is the last one. But what I'm concerned with is coming up this fall and too much blackpilling. Yes, we got to hold them accountable, but let's get some solutions. You know, I have so many friends that are boycotting 2026 election. They're like, screw it. What's the point? It doesn't get us anywhere. So they just want to stay home. And I try to convince them that that's the last thing we need to do. But when we have so many on the conservative side denigrating everything that's going on in the White House, I just want to say, look, what do we need to do? We need to join the No Kings movement. We need to impeach Trump. What is your solution to moving forward? Because right now, I don't know if you look into Project or Plan or Agenda 2028, whatever version it's called, but they're talking left-wing extremist revolution in May of 2028. And that's where this is headed. I've been talking about civil war, at least national divorce, for a couple of years, and I don't see any slowing down of that train. So I'm just wondering what your solution is, what we do next to keep this nation in place. Or, fine, national divorce. Let's carve it up and redo it, because I've seen a lot of stuff about what Trump's doing. That's where we're headed anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. You know, there's a difference between blackpilling and delivering bad news, right? The news is bad these days because the Iran war is bad news, right? It's bad things are happening. So, you know, it's not blackpilling to just recognize that and to deal with it. The thing we have to try to do is recognize how bad things are, not let it blackpill us, right? Blackpilling to me is when you give up, is when you like actually give in to the, you know, depression, that can come about when you, you know, think about how bad things are right now. The thing is, in the background of this is always the fact that we have pushed this conversation beyond anywhere I ever thought it would be. And I was talking about a little bit yesterday about prepping and how like it used to be under Obama, you know, everybody's solution was just like pack a bag, get storable food and move to the woods. Like that was the best possible case scenario. Trump coming out and being anti-globalist and being nationalistic and changing the conversation. I mean, that really has reinvigorated a lot of hope. It's that very hope that we're now losing because of the way that we've been betrayed on the Iran war. There's not an easy solution. the left is absolutely gearing up to be insanely tyrannical when they get back in. Almost every day I have a story or a clip of a Democrat who's promising this. They're saying once we're back in, it's Trump's family, it's Trump's supporters, we're coming after all of them, we're going to just open the border. I mean, they really are gearing up for, you know, total collapse. I don't have an answer necessarily. We did everything we were supposed to do. We got the right people in, and then we've been betrayed and screwed over at every pass. It sucks, but that's where we are. And it's, not helpful or beneficial to pretend this isn't where we are, but it's also not helpful to black pill and think, okay, it's over. There's nothing we can do. Everything's crazy, man. Nobody knows anything, how anything's going to turn out. How many times before did we say how much better it was that Trump actually wasn't president in 2020? Now, that was on the assumption that his 2024 administration would be so much crazier and better. And it's been a little bit, but it's that type of thing where it's like, you know, you see them steal the election. You think like, this is awful. What the hell? Our country's been stolen from us. But then 4 years later, you're like, well, we would have had Mike Pence as vice president. It would have been, the impeachments would have kept going. Like, maybe it was actually a good thing that we lost back then. You never know how things are going to turn out. So you don't ever black pill. I get very frustrated and sort of dismayed at how not very intelligent a lot of people are and how, you know, just ridiculous lies seem to spread like wildfire. It's all very frustrating. I'm never black pilled. And this might be because I've been in this space for a long time. But everybody's got to go through it. You got to dig yourself out. You got to just remember, like, and this is where the spirituality aspect of it all comes in, where you just go, as long as I'm doing my best, trying my hardest, as long as I am operating from a place of love, I'm not trying to be tricky, I'm not trying to be deceitful, then no matter what happens, I can be happy and fulfilled knowing that I gave it my all and I did my best. If I was instead trying to lie and trick people and everything was coming down on my head, I'd feel like it's my fault. It's like, as long as I know I'm doing my best, fighting as hard as I can, you know, sometimes you lose, sometimes it doesn't work out, but it's the only way to give yourself the best possible option and hopefully inspire other people around you. I'm not hopeless at all. I'm not black-pilled at all. I see this going any number of ways, some not so good, some better than not. The fact that we recognize where we're at and the sentiment that's being expressed right now on a very wide scale is so radically different than anything we've experienced before. That alone gives me hope. And just remember, at the end of the day, it's all about seizing the initiative and making them respond to you. And that's been the major sea change that's occurred with Trump, is that for the first time in our lives, they're not getting everything they want. They're not the ones absolutely dominating everything in terms of the globalists manipulating America. They're having to respond to us a lot of times. And that in and of itself is key to reorganizing things into the future. So again, I know third parties are just are a pipe dream in America, but it's got to be something like that, right? It's got to be something like that, because the option of taking over the Republican Party and using it for good has sort of been proven at this point to not have worked. And in a way, I kind of blame Trump for that a little bit, because he has the and always had the social power to reorganize the Republican Party. He just didn't do it. He fell for the lies of the establishment. He thought, hey, I won, they'll come along with me. They see how popular this is for their own benefit. They'll come along. And so he endorses rhinos and swamp creatures when really he could have used his incredible popularity with the base to absolutely shatter like long held incumbencies. You know, he could have been the guy to go, hey, Lindsey Graham, I'm against him. Trump says no. Trump says vote against Lindsey Graham. And Lindsey Graham would have been out whenever he, you know, was elected, 2018, 2016, whatever. Trump had the power to totally remake the Republican Party, and he just didn't do it. He didn't do it. And he hasn't provided, you know, a pathway for what we do after he's gone. And he's gone. He is gone. For all intents and purposes, Trump is not only not a future candidate, if it goes to the, if the midterms go to the Democrats, which it looks like it is, that's the end of his presidency. So it's not even a matter. It's not even how you feel about Trump. It's just a fact of reality. The Trump age is over and it's time to be looking into what's next. And Trump has not done anything to provide for that next generation. Certainly not now that he has saddled Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance with this war in Iran. That's basically cut them off the knees. So we do need something new. I don't know exactly what that is, but the opportunity is right now, and the time to strike is at this moment. So thank you for the call, Josh. Sorry about having to move away from your home state there. That sucks. But just don't be blackpilled. I don't know. I went through my blackpilling phase in like the early 2000s. So, you know, you got to get over it at a certain point. And just recognize that, like, this is all just a thrilling combat that we're involved in. In all likelihood, most of us don't have the ability to unilaterally and as an individual change the course of human history. But you don't know that until you try, and so you might as well give it a try. And at the end of the day, you start from nothing and go back to nothing. So what have you got to lose? Nothing, that's what. Thanks so much for the call, Josh. Let's go to Timothy in Nebraska. Go ahead, Timothy, you're on the air.
Hello, Harrison. Do you hear me all right?
I hear you loud and clear, sir. Thanks for calling in.
That's awesome. There's a movie, the actor who played Jason Bourne, it doesn't matter to me his name. He was in a movie where he was a janitor. He looked at a chalkboard. And,
Good Will Hunting with Matt Damon, yes.
Damn straight. Thank you. Well, he solved it just by doing a little scribble here, a little scribble there, and then everyone was had like a, you know, a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
That's the equation. I said that so I can say this. We have a lot of factions in this world, and they all hate Christians. They seem to not like each other, like Jews and Muslims. They seem like they don't like each other, but they hate Christians.
True.
There are a few things about Zionism that seem Christian, but they're not. Like if you put a little piece of rat poop in a glass of water, it's not a glass of water. It's a glass of water with rat poop in it.
True.
That's Zionism. So the equation is nothing makes sense because a piece of the equation is gone. There's an integer that has just been erased.
Right.
Or the duct tape over it. You pull the duct tape off of it, and that integer is kill all Christians.
Huh.
Then everything will make sense. The whole thing. Glyphosate in our water. Fluoride in our water, glyphosate on our food. That can be easily solved by just doing what the Amish do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so the simplest thing is to do what the Amish do, but Monsanto, Bayer, Big Ag working together. They act like they don't like each other much, but, yeah, they work together to poison our food and make us stupid, sick, and weak.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, and I'll just say this. They hate Christianity because Christianity is Europe used to be called Christendom, right? Christianity is the operating system of Europe. It is basically the white religion. But Christianity in and of itself and combined with sort of the historical disposition of Europeans makes people hard to control. With Christianity, it can make people impossible to control if you're trying to control them for evil, right? Because it tells you there's something higher. There's a authority that you really need to be responsible to, not the earthly authority. So, you know, this is the classic, you know, your Christian martyrs, right? Would rather die than, you know, worship the pagan god under the Romans or the emperor in Japan. This is what makes Christianity dangerous to people who want control. So at the end of the day, the thing I'm trying to point out is, yes, Christianity is spiritually opposed to what these people believe and is, hated for that reason in and of itself. But really, it all goes down to control. And if they can control you through Christianity, then they love it. That's why you have the promotion of evangelical Christianity in America today, because it's useful to control people. You can use them as a voting block to get what you want, to get the war in Iran or whatever else you want. Christianity, obviously, I believe in Christianity. I think it's the right religion and the true religion. But you can't overlook the way that the bad guys will incorporate, like take over that religion, pretend to be promoting it when really promoting the opposite. And they'll do the same with Judaism or with Islam. So, you know, it's Christianity is right and good, but it can also be perverted and corrupted as well. So we have to, you know, be on guard for that. But I do appreciate exactly what you're saying in terms of everything's so messy. You know, there's got to be something missing here. Hatred of Christianity and the destruction of white people, the destruction of the populations of people who both have the will, the character, and the ability, the intelligence and creativity to oppose and actually bring down the power structure. That's what the people in power is, you know, real concern is. And I could go on about that just really quick, because I've been thinking about this for days and days and I haven't found a good time to talk about it, but it just fits exactly what he's saying. There's a fascinating thing in history where if you don't already know the inclusion of a certain sect or a certain idea in history, you can actually read history and it all makes total sense. Like the history of Texas, if you read the history of Texas, you can read textbooks and articles and study the history of Texas for a long, long time. And you can think you have a totally full picture. And then as I'm studying Texas history, I'm seeing occasionally mentions of, yeah, where did they meet? They met in the Masonic Lodge. And it's like, okay, yeah, a lot of them were Masons. That's true. And then I'm like, well, how much was Masonry like actually involved? Like the idea of Masonry, how much did it have to do with the Texas Revolution? So then you search like Masonry, Texas Revolution, and it's like, oh, the whole thing was about Masonry. Actually, it was like, it was this big conflict between Masons and Catholics, and Santa Anna, part of his taking control and power in Mexico was because he wanted to crush the power of the Mexican Freemasons who were in. So what I'm saying is that you can look at history and think you have a full picture, but then if somebody introduces this other angle, it's like, oh, this was actually at the center of all of it the whole time, but you would never know because it's hidden, because it's secret, because it's not, you know, made the main topic of conversation. It can be hidden. Everything in history is like that. You can read about World War II or World War I or the Civil War and think you have a full picture, and then you can get one little insight and go, well, what if it was about that? What if it's all about destroying Christianity? And it's like, oh, that's what it's all about. Oh, actually, it's entirely about that, even though it's totally absent of the historical record, unless you actively go out and look for it. That reminds you of what you're talking about, where you can see this equation and go, I think something's missing. And it's this big glaring central node of the whole thing. Thanks for the call, Timothy. Let's go to Drew in California now. Drew, you are on the air from the great state of California. Go ahead.
All right. I just had a good idea. You guys are making a whole bunch of awesome T-shirts. Just wanted to throw this out first. Eagles, like the bird.
Mm-hmm.
Eagles, not ill eagles.
Eagles, not ill eagles. It's good. I like it. That's a good
then,
pun. That'd look good on a shirt.
And then just plug in, same thing, methylene blue. I whacked my head and had a seizure. I whacked my head so bad just the other 2 months ago. Still recovering, but that methylene blue and that iodine works very well. I plugged before, and you guys did a commercial on me for the iodine. But anyway, that's very good. The Iran war, I'm very 50-50. There's a lot of good points put both ways. If we didn't go in there, or if we did go in there. And my family's debating about all this stuff, too. But at least we still eat dinner and everything together.
Absolutely.
And we don't have a problem. You know,
good.
And that's the difference. And the other side of our family, should I say, can't talk to them about nothing.
Wow, so, that's a bummer.
And then I just want to end by just saying thank Jesus that we have him, and to forgive us for all of our sins and everything we sin every day, even though we don't know it, or when you go to sleep and everything, you know, you gotta open that Bible every day, man.
Amen.
And,
well, thank you very much for that.
I just want to say happy Easter and thank you, InfoWars and everybody. I appreciate you guys very much.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm sorry to hear about your injury. I hope you're recovering well, and I'm glad that some products can help you do that. A lot of Methylene Blue fans calling in today. Love to see it. Thank you so much for the call, Drew, and just couldn't agree more with everything that you say. And Yeah, look, you know, I don't know. It's more important that you have family than your family agrees with you on politics. That's my stance. So, you know, don't be the one to break your family up over politics. Yeah, let the leftists do that. Every family should be able to talk about this stuff or not. You know, it's fine. We always say, like, you need to be talking about this with everybody, but, like, you got to do it in the right way. You got to do it in the right way, and you got to do it in a way that maintains the familial closeness first and foremost. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Josh in Iowa. Go ahead, Josh. You're on the air. Hello, Josh. Josh in Iowa wants to ask me about my opinion of leaving the Trump movement, I see. You're on the air, Josh. Going once, going twice. Okay, let's go to Nathan in Seattle. Go ahead, Nathan. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Harrison, man? Good, I love your product, dude. The Methylene Blue is huge in my life. I appreciate you guys so much. I wanted to talk about, like, are we in a Bukele situation?
I wish.
You know what I mean? Where, I mean, I think the table needs to get dumped. I think that the government is so lobbied that it's really beyond reflection at this point.
And you know what? That might be the most disappointing thing about Trump, because the whole thing about Trump was that he didn't need the lobbyist money. He ran in 2016 saying, I don't need the lobbyist money. We got him elected. Once you're president, you know, you're president, you have the power. Why has he become a slave to his donors? He never needed them. Once he got elected in 2016, like, he never needed another donor. The American people would have dished out whatever he needed, and he didn't even need that because he was so popular and beloved. So it's like, that's one of the things that makes the least amount of sense, is that now he's been captured by the donors when he never needed them. And the other frustrating, I mean, El Salvador is a completely different animal, obviously tiny country that could get away with this and not draw a ton of international attention while it was getting done. But Bukele showed the blueprint. It is possible to actually rescue a country, utterly and irrecognizably transform it from being the most murderous hell world crime capital of the world to, like, a beautiful, flourishing tourist hotspot in, like, less than 10 years because a powerful executive destroyed the judiciary corruption. That's what happened. And again, that's the disappointing thing about Trump, is it's like, oh, what do we need to do? Well, we need a Bukele-like figure. We thought that was Trump. And if he had the Bukele-like game plan and will to enforce what America needed, then we, like El Salvador, would be experiencing a renaissance right now. So again, it's just sort of another layer of frustration, seeing how it can be done, seeing it be done just south of us. And yet it's not been, sorry for interrupting, but I just got excited because I think you're exactly right. Final thoughts, Nathan?
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, you know, the insolvency, I think, is engineered. I mean, this insolvency, it's like, you know, we were $10.6 trillion in debt with Obama, and that wasn't really that long ago, and we can all remember it. Yep. Now we're 31.1, and we've got, you know, corruption up the wazoo. And just think about if we just consolidated and brought everything back to America and gave it back to the people.
We would be more rich than you can even imagine. We would be living in a paradise. I mean, look at what China is able to do. They're not nearly as prosperous, as wealthy, or as good as America. But our goodness has been turned against us, and we have been destroyed from the inside out for now.
In a world where globalists, depopulationists, principalities, and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing Zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the InfoWar today by going to thealexjonesstore.com and picking up a bottle of Zeolite.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.